frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause when them old boys raise on shotguns, we say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
It's old Shazaz here. Hope y'all doing well. I posted some links over there in the chat room at www.shazazradio.com/superchat.html if you want to join in on the conversation there. Posted some links to some videos having to do with water and static electricity and electricity in general. There's with every scientific experiment out there, there's always a little anomaly that occurs, such as the one video posted is about if you take a balloon and you rub it on your hair or a piece of cloth or something like that, you build up some extra electrons on that balloon. And then when you put it to a stream of water, you actually get the water attracting towards the balloon. So what's going on in there, since water has a negative and a positive side to it, you know, it's a basically they say it looks like Mickey Mouse because they have two hydrogen atoms connected to the oxygen. And so anyway, basically what's going on there is opposites attract, so those water molecules are actually aligning themselves to that static field, that static charge on the opposite side of the, you know, on the balloon there. And so with these anomalies that I'm talking about, you know, a lot of different people throughout history has figured out ways of which to, you know, kind of capitalize on it, sort of such as over 100 years ago, Lord Kelvin generator came to be. They call it Lord Kelvin thunderstorm, or there's all kinds of names out there. Essentially, it's a couple of streams of water falling through some metal buckets, which in turn has a line that crisscrossed to opposite buckets underneath there. As the water's falling through, it exchanges charges. One side becomes positive, and then the other side becomes negative, and then after a while builds up a high enough charge to literally jump across the spark gap. And so you can actually generate electricity with falling water. Now, one character in one of the videos I posted down there, he said, well, it'd take you 6 years to charge up your cell phone. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but he did have a really nice setup. So if you have an opportunity to look at that version of the Lord Kelvin generator, I suggest take a peek at it. Anyway, then there was a another link that I posted in there, a video link for water and conductivity. Water isn't very conductive at all. It's well, I'm at a loss for words to say there. But anyway, until you put some sort of like salt or, you know, something else in there, some impurity in the water, then it doesn't conduct electricity very well at all. Dad burn it. What the heck's going on in my brain today? Anyway, so When I see these anomalies, such as the static electricity bending water, I always think about there's a force going on there. It's actually pulling that water to the opposite charge there. And what could you do with that? There's a lot of experiments that I think about all the time that I never really get around to checking out, but this is one that I'm really fascinated with. I'm actually going to try to see what would happen if I put a negative ion generator into either a small plastic or metal boat and put it on the water, just to see what occurs. Because whenever you're messing around with static electricity, right before the actual discharge of the electricity itself, you actually feel an ion wind being generated as if it's pulling energy in from the atmosphere around it. It's actually like a cool breeze right before a static discharge across there. Happens with a Van de Graaff generator, Lord Kelvin generator, and you know, all the different static generators out there. Let's see, Wimshurst, that's another one. That's the one I was trying to, my brain's not working today. So anyway, if you actually watch these videos, you can see, even on the Lord Kelvin generator, on one side it's trying to push the water one direction, on the other side it's trying to pull it in the opposite direction, determined by whatever the charge is. And so I'm thinking, how far could you actually take this? I'm fascinated with water because with things like hydrodynamics and water pressure and vacuum, water's a pretty powerful tool. They use water. Believe it or not, there's actually a bandsaw out there that uses high pressure water to literally cut through wood and steel, and it's pretty amazing. But you know, the water can have a really destructive power to it. Whenever you want to use it for a tool, it can actually be used that way. The two elements that actually make up the water molecule, hydrogen and oxygen, together, you know, perfectly safe. Take them apart and you don't want to smoke around either one of them. It's they're one's implosive and the other one's explosive. And so it's amazing how something that you rely on every day has so much energy potential to it. So I'm thinking of all the different ways that you could use water. Not just the force, the weight of it, the implosive and explosive by separation of the water, static electricity. There's so many experiments that could be done with water that it's just mind-blowing. Problem is, I'm only one guy, so I try to put together the dream team, so to speak, the virtual labs deal, where we could actually get people on board to actually doing live experiments. And so, you know, I'm hoping that we can actually get that going here on ShazizRadio.com, where we got some real live streams going on all the time, so that if you're interested in a specific subject or whatever, as far as alternative energy, that you can actually look in and see what everybody's working on, and that, and if you know, suddenly somebody comes across an idea, you know, what could you actually use that electromotive force for, as far as static electricity, you know, that things that are normally non-magnetic or neutral or static will pick it up. So it's pretty interesting. It's a pretty interesting anomaly. You can actually pick up paper with a static charge, and you can actually see, as you can bend water, a stream of water, towards that negative charge. That's why those water molecules are trying to align themselves to the opposite charge. You can actually see that physical bend in the water. You know, in the microwave oven, water is a dipole molecule, and so when you send a super fast short wave through that water molecule, it constantly tries to align itself to whichever field, the top or the bottom, the north or south field or whatever that's coming through, and so it can't align itself. It's constantly rocking back and forth, which causes it to rock so rapidly that it literally creates friction, which in turn creates heat that cooks your food. So you know that water can actually be moved by electricity. And when it comes down to actually separating the water molecules, there are experiments out there where they use radio waves, high-frequency radio waves, to actually separate the hydrogen and oxygen, so that you can have, you know, either one to burn. There's actually one video out there that I've seen, probably watched a couple, two or three times, where he's literally lighting the water on fire on demand by hitting it with a high-frequency wave, then igniting that as it separates. So, you know, there's perfect fuel right there as far as I'm concerned. If you can run an internal combustion engine on water, which we know can be done, it's been done. And so if you burn water and then out the other side you end up with water, sounds like a no-brainer to me. You know, it drives me insane that we are here in the year 2016, getting ready to go into the year 2017, and we ain't gone any farther than what we have. That Sure, we got a lot of amazing toys. We got all kinds of computers and cool gadgets and stuff like that. But folks out there are always continuously hollering about global warming this or climate change or climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up and that kind of craziness. But yet, we're sitting on the most amazing planet, rock, whatever you want to call it, flat earth, hollow earth, convex, concave. Everybody wants to argue about all the craziness, but you've got more energy out there than you could ever use in a trillion lifetimes or more. And water being one of the best fuels out there. So if you want to talk about being environmentally sound, then that's the technology that would be right there in the middle of my... Hold on. And you're alive.
Oh, boy.
So
what's going on?
Anyway, so that I lost my train of thought when it went doom 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 doom, whatever that Skype tone is. Stephen Gibbons said, "Go get my espresso because my brain isn't functioning very good today." Anyway, and so basically, what I've been talking about is water, static electricity, and energy that. The earth is completely, it's, everything's energy. Everything has protons, neutrons, and electrons. Everything has energy potential. And you can't get more environmentally sound, as far as I'm concerned, than actually using water in a manner that, you know, even if you're burning it in a internal combustion engine or using the weight and the pressure and the vacuum that you can create by moving water. There's so many different potentials. But if you look at the way that nature reacts, one element and another, opposites attract, nature's always trying to balance itself out. If you put more electrons on one thing than you do on the other and you bring them into contact with it, you actually get a static discharge across there. You actually get some sort of force that occurs. Something as simple as rubbing a balloon on your hair and causing the water molecules to try to align themselves to the opposite charge. And actually a repulsion as well. There's a little static bell out there that they experiment that's been going on for years where you goes on one side, picks up a charge, and then goes on the other side and discharges and causes it to bounce back and forth. It's pretty cool, but they're actually getting work done with something as simple as static electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So I started a science experiment here in my here in my radio studio that I'm going to try to do using the Van de Graaff generator and see how it comes out, because I'm thinking, you know, water isn't a tightly bound... all the water molecules together that actually make up, you know, a cup of water or a pan of water,
mm-hmm.
they're not all tightly bound. And so if you have one object in the middle of it that is negatively charged more, and those water molecules continue to try to realign themselves depending on where that floating object is, my curiosity is could you actually get a propulsion or an attraction to a boat that was sitting in water that was being charged by a negative charge. You understand what I'm trying to say here?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's an interesting experiment to try out. The reason why I try to bring everybody all these ideas and little anomalies like this is so that people will actually get out there and do some experiments for themselves. You know, when you guys hear this on there, there's a lot of little experiments that you can actually take and teach kids at school or something like that. I did that video called Physics Toy, and I'm looking to do a bunch more. And these little anomalies, if you experiment with them, you know, something like the balloon and the static charge on the balloon, and then actually being able to bend water, there's actually a force that's going on there. You actually get some work done. And so if you take these, all these little anomalies, whether it be when we talk about Peltier elements or thermoelectrics, you know, hydroelectrics, whatever, there's so many different ways to tinker around with energy. It's just mind-blowing. But if you actually take the time to experiment with these, you might find something. You might find a new discovery, a missing piece of the puzzle, what you can actually do with the energy that surrounds. Excuse me, folks. Oh, man. Good morning, Thomas.
Morning.
Where's Raymond? He's still sleeping in?
I guess. I don't know.
Have you ever seen any experiments where they put negative ions to a boat, whether it be plastic or aluminum or metal or anything like that?
Not yet.
Well, I've seen tons and tons of them, you know, pulling water with balloons and plastic or, you know, any non-polar or whatever material. And some cloth or fur or whatever, anything to put extra electrons on there.
Right.
So, I'm thinking, I want to see, and this is the point that I've been trying to make, is I want to see how far you can take this anomaly. Not just it's a cool thing. Like the one guy in the video that I posted over there at the superchat.html, he said, well, it would take you 6 years to charge up your cell phone with this system. That's a long doggone time to charge up a cell phone. I think you've just got it, you know, if you're actually building up several thousand volts of electricity and you can't charge a capacitor faster than 6 years, you got issues, man. So, while I like this setup and the way that they had this. I mean, they had a really huge Lord Kelvin style generator set up, and they used like shower heads to do it. One of the things that I was wondering about that is because it had so many droplets of water in the middle, whether or not some of them would actually be countering out the force that could have been charged up. Like, let's say each individual droplet are going down multitudes of different pipes. You know, it's not all falling down the same deal, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, instead of just two buckets you're going through,
right,
maybe 1,000 buckets that you're going through, so that you're building that charge up more rapidly. That's what I'm talking about. See, that's when you first look at the Lord Kelvin generator, it's fascinating that you're getting energy generation from boiling water. But that's not enough for me. I want to know how much farther that you can actually take this. You know, could you literally create a lightning bolt if you had the system set up that would, you know, exchange electrons? See, one of those falling waterfalls on the other side of each other, one of them becomes positively charged and one of them becomes negatively charged, and they keep exchanging those charges back and forth while nature tries to balance itself out. And that's the key. If you know that when you throw nature off balance, it doesn't matter what you do, nature's going to put it back in balance. As long as there's a path for that energy to flow back to each other, then it's going to balance itself out. That's a battery going flat, or two buckets of water finally draining over to meet each other's level. Now, you can actually put a bucket of water next to an empty bucket and have a drain going from one to the other, and you can control how fast that bucket goes, that water leaves that bucket over to the opposite side. Now, the same exact thing can be done with electricity, resistors, and so on and so forth. You know, it's basically valves and if you understand electricity, you understand plumbing, is what I'm trying to say. The way that water flows and how you can restrict the flow or even build up the pressure.
Anyway, right.
Yeah. So, you guys got any experiments going on your side of the fence?
Well, I'm back over where I was at before, so.
Cool. All right, so, anyway, not only does water have the potential to be used to cut through things, you know, but look at basic erosion. Erosion changes landscaping all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that one anomaly of the water actually having the power to literally take away dirt and rock and whatever's in its way, that one anomaly would have just been nothing more than a nuisance until somebody said, well, if this water has the potential to move all this earth over here, imagine what could happen if we highly pressurized this water and then shot it in through wood and metal and stuff like that. Have you seen any of the saws that they use?
Water jet.
Yeah. They cut through metal, they cut through wood, they cut through stone with water, you know. That's pretty high pressure, that's pretty impressive, but basically taking something that nature already does, erosion, and
controlling it,
expanding on it. How far could you take it? This is the key. This is the key to my Mad Science channel, is to, when you hear these little anomalies on here, always think about, you know, how far can you go with this? I get frustrated because, you know, I keep saying we're here in the year 2016, getting ready to go in the year 2017, and I feel like science is dragging its foot. You know, sure, we got a lot of cool stuff. We got a lot of cool toys and gizmos and gadgets and all that kind of stuff, and it's impressive of all the nifty gear that mankind has come up with. But if we can't take all this information that we've learned and not only learn how to live in perfect harmony with nature, but get all the energy that we need to run our nifty gizmos in perfect harmony with nature,
right,
then I feel like that science, it's, I don't know the word I want to use. I don't want to.
You feel that people have failed to use science to its full potential.
Yeah.
Science is nothing more than a study of nature.
That's exactly it. You know, we don't know everything there is to know, but we have observed and we can measure and stuff like that. But I feel like at the stage of the game, when over 100 years ago, Lord Kelvin built a static generator, and there were static generators before all that. You know, the work that Tesla did in high frequency, and the Van de Graaff generator, and man, there's some really old devices out there. I can't remember half the names, but I got a few of them posted up there on ShazizRadio.com. Just look around out there. If you see something you're interested in, throw a question in the chat room or contact on Skype. And for those of you out there listening, you're always welcome to call in. Add me as a contact on Skype. Just remember, we try to be respectful on here. We don't want nobody over cussing each other out and that kind of jazz. It's all about knowledge and mad science and, you know, just getting along, passing good information. But anyway, that's basically what today's show's about. I'm just trying to, I pointed out some little science experiments, one with the balloon in the water, and, you know, one on changing the different conductivity of water. You know, water in itself isn't conductive. you know, anything could be conductive. But until you add some sort of, you know, what we call contamination or salt or whatever in there, like, as far as if you were standing in a deal of distilled water, and I'm not saying don't go out there and try this because something would really seriously go awry. Don't learn electrical safety by accident. But if you were standing in a plastic bucket with distilled water and had electricity running through it,
mm-hmm.
your body, when the salt in your body changed that water to be more conductive, then you'd get shocked. At first, when you stepped in, you wouldn't be shocked. Until what is the doggone word I'm looking for, man? That, contamination. That's the easiest way I can think about it.
Right.
You know, you got salt in your body, and so once that changes that actual consistency of the water to be more conductive, you become that third.
That conductor.
Yeah. So, but don't try that at home. You see these people out there, they'll take these, they'll take one end of the wire and they'll run it into a deal of distilled water, and they'll have a light bulb hooked up to the power, and you see the light bulb don't come on, but the moment they put the salt in there, suddenly things change real rapidly. See, there's another anomaly that would be worthy of checking out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can get ion propulsion with high voltage static discharge, they do it. There's actually a couple videos out there where they use capacitors discharging to actually get motion, you know, by the ion drive is what they're calling them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, why couldn't you do the same doggone thing to build literally an ion drive for a boat? You know that the water molecules are going to try to align themselves, and that process of aligning themselves, it's kind of like, you know, two magnets being in general vicinity of each other. Something's going
right.
to happen there.
Right.
So it's worthy of a test. I actually stole one of my wife's little aluminum pie pans, so I'll probably get beat up, but I got a little...
You going to be toothless?
Probably. So I got a little plastic lid floating in it right now, and I actually rubbed my towel, and then I tried my hair, and then I put that on that... on that water to see how it was acting, and it kind of acted like that bell that I talked about earlier where they charge one up and it goes across and discharges, repelling and attraction. So after the show, when I don't need the computer, I'm going to use the Van de Graaff generator and see how far I can actually push that anomaly.
Hey, don't think that because you turn your computer off it's safe from static electricity.
Well, I just don't want to, like, crashing during the show. You know, I'm sitting here, all these static discharge going off and windows popping up all over the place. It's really not good for me.
Suddenly, Shazoo's radio disappears.
Yeah. And that's kind of a sickening sound. Have you ever woke up to that sound? Fall asleep watching TV and wake up and there's that doggone sound when it went off air. That's crazy.
It means something really, really heavy. Like there's no more telly.
Yeah. Could be like emergency break-in or something like that, or the apocalypse already occurred and you slept right through it. Hey,
or you just woke up in the past and they don't, you live in an era, you're in an era now where they don't have television 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, and everybody goes home. It's like some small towns out here in the United States, they like at certain times of night, if you don't get your fuel or your cookies or your chips or soda pop,
they shut the local gas station down. That's the only place to get it.
That's right.
You got to drive 25, 30, 50, 100 miles to get whatever it is you're trying to get.
That's right. And so that whoever's running the TV station in that local community, it shuts it off and goes to bed, and you all sitting there watching, boo!
Yeah. You going to go to bed? No, I'm going to stay up and watch the dot a little longer.
That would be pretty bad if somebody was literally amused by that.
You haven't been... You totally don't know what I was referencing when I was making those comments, did you?
Uh-uh.
Jeez. You need to go watch The Young Ones.
Is that...
the guy who said that it meant something really heavy?
Yeah.
He was standing there going, it's kind of got a little bit of a beat to it, and he starts trying to dance to it.
Ah!
Mind you, they've all been up all day, so...
Alright, so, well, you know, if I'm all interested in all these different anomalies, I could probably, get into standing there listening to that for a while to see if it's going to do anything as far as, it's something's going on. It's annoying me, so there's some sort of force that's occurring. And if I'm forced to listen to it, you know.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you're investigating anomalies like the crack of a whip. They don't like it when I crack this whip. They run faster. I'm getting some energy out of this.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a lot less energy from my arm to crack this whip than I get out of the dogs as they pull my sled. It's over unity.
Why not? You just got 100 people to take off running in every direction because they didn't want to get popped by it. I mean, like one of them little tasers, you know, you go out there, you ever seen them things that they sound bad these days. I mean, yeah, you can get a lot of people to take off running when you got one of those. So there's that's got to be proof of over unity right there. You just move several tons of people, you know, everybody weighs at least, 90 pounds or something like that.
Couple hundred thousand volts of power, but just barely a little tiny bit of amperage.
Yeah, and you got everybody
motivated.
You'll
be using like maybe 20, 30 watts of power to move.
Yeah, moving tons and tons.
Move several horsepower worth of people.
Yep, and you'd be surprised. Even those big folks could get up off the couch really fast when they see one of those coming.
Actually, most of the big people I know don't move very fast until they're ready. When they do,
yeah, look out.
It's shocking. People are just like, their eyes are wide, their mouth is hanging up, and like, next thing you know, they're laying flat on the ground because they just got hit, you know?
Mowed down by the freight train coming through.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, there's anomalies there, man. Everything. For every action's an equal and opposite reaction's what they say. And so, train going down the road, not down the road, hopefully the train stays on the tracks. But anyway. But a train going down the tracks in your general vicinity sends out acoustic wave, a vibration in the ground. There's so much. You're talking tons and tons of... metal and whatever's on board going down the road, and so that that's a lot of energy. Now that energy is transferred out in every doggone direction. That's why we're always talking about they say that energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed. So where's it going? It's being transferred wherever it is. Nature's trying to balance itself out. You just sent a several ton piece of machinery down a metal railroad track that's jarring everything around. Do you imagine those folks who live right next to a railroad track, what it's like in their house? You still there, Thomas? Or did I lose you? I think I lost him. Anyway, my uncle, he used to live...
I'm here. I didn't realize my microphone was muted.
My uncle, he used to live right... It couldn't have been more than a couple hundred feet away from railroad tracks. And every single time those trains come by, there's stuff vibrating off the walls. And not to mention that, the railroad tracks where he was at... there's an intersection, so you know they got to blast the horn at every intersection so that people see them coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so living in that house for him, he got used to it.
Right.
But imagine...
Might everybody jump out of their skin?
Yeah. Imagine being the guest in the guest room and all of a sudden you get woke up by a train horn. Oh, man. But that's still a lot of energy. Every doggone thing you do, you pull that whistle on that train, and you're sending an acoustic wave out that can be heard for miles. So we're just surrounded by what I like to call anomalies and energy everywhere. And if you take all these little ideas,
mm-hmm,
and expand on them, That's my hopes, is to get enough people interested in actually doing physical research. Don't just listen to what we're talking about. Try it out. You know,
right,
and we'll
see what what gets cooking in your brain and how you can use it.
Yeah, and then come on the show and share it with us. You know, hey, I tried out that static boat idea, and the boat actually moves. You put a negative ion generator inside of it, and... it actually causes the boat to move. Now, there's a possibility that you could expand on that even further to maybe even make a life-size boat that would actually move. You know, sure, maybe modifications, mm-hmm, like the pop-pop boat, what we talked about a long time ago, is that, you know, it's a little, basically, steam engine or a heat transfer system or whatever that actually gets the boat to moving. And they even used the diaphragm in the doggone boat to where... that's why they called it a pop-pop boat, because it actually sounded like a little motor running as that water hammer was hitting inside there.
Right. Well, and they ramped it up so they would make that noise, because they know kids love a sound. That's why they stick a baseball card in their spokes. Clip it to the frame, so stick it through the spokes, so when they're riding their bike down the road, it's going...
Yeah. Toys with noise, man. Kids love them.
Yep.
You know, it's unlimited, folks. The things that you could actually learn just by doing a little bit of experiments. You know, when I was going to school, we actually did experiments in school. They don't do that anymore because people's worried about somebody getting hurt or whatever, you know. Litigious
society. Right. Well, they're not worried about somebody getting hurt. They're worried about somebody, about getting sued by somebody who's mad about that person getting hurt.
Yeah.
All comes down to dollars.
I feel like it's cheating the future generation of actually being able to, you know, surely whenever they get out of school, you know, maybe get out there and do some research on their own on the internet or something like that. They might try some experiments or whatever. But you could probably spark a lot of thought in a lot of people's young kids' minds by, you know, teaching them some really cool, you know, science. You know,
right.
There were toys that they used to have that... you put baking soda in, a little submarine would go up and down in the water, you know, and the explanations of why it actually does that, and it was cool.
Right.
You know? And they actually had, there was a balloon that you hooked to, you could either put it on water or you could let it go in the air, and it would spin around in the air when the balloon was letting the air out of it. You know, little cars that you hook a balloon to, and it causes the car to roll from the air pressure behind it. How far could you take that? You know, somebody took that force all the way to a jet engine.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Concentration. And you were talking about using the water falling to see how much power you could generate and whatnot. If you, instead of just splitting it once, if you could split it multiple times.
Yeah.
With like a shower head or something like that. Might consider 3D printing for that option, because there are actually models and people have printed them and they actually work to make shower heads. So you could custom make something that, you know, you could control exactly where every single nozzle's at and how the direction of the water flows.
That would be brilliant, man.
Yep, see how many different times you can split it, how much energy you can get out of each split. Because I think it's all down to the surface area. However much surface area you're creating on the outside of the streams of the water is going to determine how much energy you're going to be able to pull out of that amount of water as it's passing by.
Yeah, and so, you know, this could actually be, like I said, the balloon idea right there. You know, that force that somebody learned from that force, they got jet engines now. They got rocket engines. And imagine if you could take something that was started 100 or more years ago, a static generator, and figure out a useful way just to drop water, recirculating water, dropping water, getting the energy out of the water, using the water to, for your fish, using the water for whatever, you know. And it was all done basically in harmony with nature, man. Look at all the waterfalls. Have you ever noticed how literally really cool it is around a waterfall?
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking, is if you split that up enough to get enough power out of that, you're going to get some evaporative cooling, too, out of it.
Yeah.
And or some, blow some air over it, you might even be able to not only get a cool breeze coming off it, but you also end up getting even more power coming off of that water. Because by blowing the air across it, you're increasing the amount of airflow that's going over those streams of water.
Yep.
So, which I'm pretty sure that's probably what one is, the airflow as it's passing through the air. It's flowing through the air instead of the air flowing through it.
And so if you're going to be using the water anyway, what's to stop you from, like, you know, running it through a system before you actually send it out to your field to water your garden or whatever, you know, to actually help to cool down your house and build up a static charge, which in turn charges a capacitor bank that bleeds over into a battery bank, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, evaporative cooling and charging and watering your plants all wrapped up in one little bundle. You know, that's the way that I think. I'm still studying hydrodynamics and pressure and vacuum. I'm still stuck on this water thing. I already got the plasma figured out. I already know how to generate plasma. I know what I want to do with the plasma. So,
but you know how to generate, you just ain't figured out how to contain it yet.
Yeah.
Well, you haven't figured out how to build the equipment. We've discussed what you need. You just need the better tooling capabilities available to you.
It needs to be sealed and it needs precision, but it will work. I mean, So in the meantime, I'm looking for something that everybody's readily available. You know, water. What can you do
right.
In water? You can do tons and tons.
Look at the tools you have. Solve the problem you have with the tools that you have.
Yeah.
Don't try to solve it with something you don't have tools for, and then you wait forever begging for somebody to come along and do it with the tools that they've got.
Yep, and so, you know, if I'm going to have to be a little bit on hold for building my version of my plasma reactor, then at least I can get something else accomplished by, you know, looking into all the other different things. And for this point in time, I'm really fascinated with the power of water. I've always been fascinated with the power of water. I mean, water causes, we talked about erosion and how they took that that force to the extreme, and then they were cutting steel with water. You know, that's pretty impressive. You know, and all these different anomalies that I'm talking about, even if you want to get into thermoelectrics, a thermal couple, they built a thermoelectric generator that they sent all the way to Pluto. That's what, you know, NASA said you did. All right, so it went.
I'm more impressed with the fact that they figured out how to reverse that. You send power through it, and you can actually control the direction the heat is flowing instead of using a directional flow of heat to produce electricity.
Okay, and with that said, knowing that water, here's another good science experiment out there for somebody. Knowing that water is a dipole molecule that has it's polar, it has a north and a south pole on there. And whenever you put static electricity in the general vicinity of it, it wants to be, the molecules of water want to align themselves opposite to track kind of thing.
So no, they're aligned. They're not wanting to align. they're not aligning because there's some desire to line up. They're aligning because one end's being pulled one way, the other end's being pulled the other way. I mean, a rope doesn't line up because it likes being pulled on. It lines up because you're yanking on either end of it, forcing it to go in a straight line.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. You pull too hard, the rope breaks. You pull too hard on the water molecule, it breaks. You get oxygen and hydrogen.
Okay, so
if you can use that energy of it lining up, because that, like I said before, the secret is taking all this energy that's around us. It's all randomly bumping around and bouncing around. If you can control its direction, focus it to go one direction, you can get work out of it.
And then
turn around and bust that water molecule, so you can then use the reconnection, the unbalanced nature you were talking about, where it wants to go back, come back together and bond together to burn it, to make energy off it. What do you get out of that? Now you've used it twice.
Yeah.
While doing one act.
Have you seen those cake pans that look like a donut? They make them round cakes with a hole in the center.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, imagine one of those, let's say a plastic one, that had some aluminum plates on each side of it and, you know, strategically placed all the way around. That's almost like a rotor. And then you had your water in there.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if you alternated your static charge from this plate to that plate and that plate all the way around in a circle? Could you actually get that water to spin around?
Start circulating?
Yeah.
Probably. Have to try it and find out.
Yeah, that's an experiment that everybody out there who is interested should give a shot to, man. Because
mm-hmm.
if you could get that to happen using static electricity, then that moving water, now you can actually build up centrifugal force, which can build up hydraulic pressure. Now you can start using that water as it's flowing through to do some work. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, as long as the water molecules are going to want to put, they're going to want to align themselves over here, and then the next one over there, and back and forth. And if you can get that water to actually circulate using static electricity, how far could you take it? That's the question. I honestly believe you could take it to the limit. You know. Or you basically use that static electricity to build like the equivalence of a hydraulic clutch, or not a hydraulic clutch, like a torque converter that's in your car. You know what I mean? Where you get that fluid spinning around so rapidly, and then there's also the cavitation portion where you could actually heat water by circulating it. You see what I mean? Quiet. Crickets. Is your microphone off again? Oh, man. Hate it when that happens. Either his microphone went dead or he actually set it off. So anyway, I'm always interested in seeing how far you can take each one of these anomalies. And
or I might have come down with a cold and I'm not one of those people that just lays in bed and cries about it. That's why I'm on air. So, but I didn't want you guys to have to suffer through me coughing my brains out.
Oh, hacking and gacking like I was doing earlier.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that makes good for radio. Hey, but we keep this operation together with duct tape and baling wire and, you know, whatever else we can chew and gum if necessary. Plug a leak over here or something.
Aluminum foil.
Aluminum foil, yeah. Aluminium. So anyway, if you could actually get water to spin using static electricity, I think that would be cool, because, you know, even if it took you a while to get up to speed, once you get that water moving, there's a lot of force behind moving water, literally, and you can turn that into something else. So this is why I keep emphasizing, try some experiments, see what you can do with what, you know, little, I mean, when you're sitting there watching as somebody rubs a balloon on their head, and you can seriously sit there and watch as this water falling, literally bending over, trying to attract to that balloon.
Basically, you're saying be a scientific detective.
Yeah.
You don't have to have white lab coats and a sheepskin to do it. No. Anybody can. In fact, most of the greatest inventions were created by common laymen.
Yeah, just try it, you know. And, of course, if there's ever anything that we mention here on Shazoo's Radio that could potentially be dangerous, we'll point that out to you. So we always want you to practice safety if you're going to try anything. But these,
Look into laser with remaining eye.
Yeah. Common sense. Stay safe. Wear safety glasses and all that kind of jazz.
That's Raymond. I wasn't sure just how far he took it, but Raymond is very serious about eye safety.
Yep.
Growing up with one eye, you learn to be extremely careful because you don't have a second eye to use if that one goes out, you know?
Yep.
So people should treat both eyes that way. Both legs, you know?
And there's
you can't cry about it and go back to the factory for, you know, a warranty replacement if you lose this body, you know?
There's There's no pain that matches eye pain.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
As far as I'm concerned, I'd rather have a toothache.
I have had a flake of sharp metal laying on my cornea.
Yeah.
Still, as much as it hurt, I still say that tooth pain, there is no other. An abscess tooth, it would drive a man to walk into traffic just to get it to stop.
Okay, well, let's just say that any pain close to your brain is not cool.
Right. Well, pain is a simple mechanism to explain to you that there's something wrong, so you will correct the situation to make it stop.
Yeah.
If you're in pain and you've nothing to stop it, and it stops hurting on its own, 9 times out of 10, that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
If I had not gotten that flake of metal that it was literally, I was cutting aluminum with a mill, so it was cutting off little thin shavings and little tiny chunks. Little sharp, jagged edges. You know how things are when you slice them up real thin.
Oh, yes.
They crinkle and crack and fall apart. I didn't think about it. I took my safety glasses off, and I'm trying to see what's going on there, and I hadn't blown all this stuff off, so I blew it off, and I forgot, hey, I have a fan sitting right here pointed right at my face to keep me cool because it's humid and it's, you know, kind of hot out. That dust hit the stream of the air from the fan, and it blew that whole cloud back in my face, and before I could collapse my eyelids to block it from hitting them, one little flake, one eye, landed almost dead center on the cornea. And I'm telling you, I've had pieces, big pieces of tungsten carbide, which is, it's like a ceramic that is almost as hard as diamond. And we're talking about a piece that just shattered off, sharp as a piece of broken glass, flew out and embedded itself in the white of my eye.
Yes.
And it won't come, that stuff's not magnetic enough even with a hard drive magnet to pull it out. So I had to reach up, flick that out with my fingernail. I felt next to nothing compared to that little tiny flake just laying on my cornea. That was the most painful thing I've ever had happen to my eye, was that aluminum on my eye, my cornea. Come to find out, while I was trying to figure out what I was going to do about it, because I couldn't get the thing off of there, I couldn't, you know, bring myself to reach in there and scrape it off, or, you know, even touch it to pull it loose to get it to stick to my finger more than on my eye.
Yeah.
If you don't get that out of there, it'll work its way down through the cornea, and eventually it'll end up blinding you. I got really lucky. If you got any allergies that cause your eyes to pus up, you get something stuck in your eye, try that if you can't get to a doctor to get it removed and get it flushed out.
Yep.
Little kitten came in, really, really allergic to. While I was laying down, she snuck into my room, lay down on the bed. I guess my eyes started pussing up. You know, of course, I woke up and there were crusts and flake and whatnot from, you know, it coming out and drying on my eyes. And it pulled that piece of aluminum out with it.
Well,
so
I understand what you're saying on the old white thing, man. Scratch on. Have you ever run eye first into an evergreen tree or done that once? I had metal in my eye. Actually, the worst one I had was brake fluid in my eye.
Ooh.
That was, I had my head underneath the bathtub for a while, swashing that stuff out, but I was working on a dune buggy and had crimped off the front brakes because you use on a dune buggy, it's cool to use the back brakes to.
It was used brake fluid, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, man, all the metal and whatnot that was in that stuff carrying around there from those, every now and then, those pieces of metal bumping into each other.
Yep, you want to talk about pain. And Stephen Gibbons gave you the Man Flu Survivor Award. He's at, it's in the chat room. He posted a picture for you.
Yeah.
So, anyway, practice safety, folks, but all these other little anomalies that we're talking about, test them out, you know, and see how far you can take them. Get you a voltmeter and go out and measure everything you can think about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see, in the millivolt range, could you amplify that anyway by, you know, like batteries? You could take a nickel and a penny and you can put it in any grapefruit or lemon or any citric fruit, and you can actually make a chemical battery, you know. And so how far could you take it? How many oranges or lemons would it take to light up a light bulb? Kind of jazz. See what I mean? So, anyway, do some testing and some investigating. If you guys find something cool and you want to share it out here on Shaziz Radio, then jump over there and get a hold of us. Let us know what you're working on. And, you know, I'm still working towards getting virtual labs so we can actually do some online, while we're actually on radio would be nice as well. Be doing experiments and stuff.
I still say we use the tools that are available to us for now.
Yep.
You know, get out there and use something like Google Hangouts or something like that, and YouTube to basically dump the virtual labs thing online, because they not only offer the opportunity to have the video there, and they have, you know, they give tools to basically work with it to modify it. And the guy who was actually doing the work is still working with me.
Cool.
The other guy who, you know, got all upset because he was he thought that he should have something his way because he put a little bit of money towards something that was taking a whole lot of money and a whole lot of time. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you still got the people willing to build it, you can still build it.
Well,
we'll get something together. I say we work with Revolution Green because that's what it's all about, is finding green solutions to replace some of the world's problems.
Yeah.
Move forward on that.
And for you folks out there who's not familiar with Revolution Green, there's a, in the super chat, if you scroll up to the top right under where it says Mad Scientist Store, which we need to get back on again, there's a banner ad that will take you to Revolution Green's alternative energy news. And right underneath there is rwgresearch.com. And scrolling down underneath there, you can find Zero Fossil Fuel and... you know, we put links on here to researchers out there that are doing any kind of alternative energy research, that's trying, you know, pretty much doing the same thing we're doing, just trying to get information out and help people out. So, if you know a one that we missed, send them our way so we can help promote them as well. You know,
mm-hmm.
This isn't about, you know, making money or fame and fortune. You know, I got a natural love for science because I just love the way to learn how things work. But at the same sense, I've been told that the world is in need of certain things. And, you know, if you know how to do something, you can be helpful and beneficial to the world. You know, not everybody's an auto mechanic, but those who are auto mechanics, they're like in demand, you know. If you got the skill and you can go out there and help people out and...
there's nothing wrong with making a little money when you're doing something, as long as you're putting some value into it. We've had this discussion before, too.
Yep.
The term profit has gotten distorted because people think that it's just basically getting more back than you put into it. And the truth is, profit is basically the act of receiving something you want more than somebody else wants for something you have that they want more than you want.
Yeah.
You know, it's an equal trade that to each of the individuals, they came out ahead. You know,
well,
it's the problem is we got people that want to find a way to avoid having to do anything themselves to make more money off of something, so they're willing to steal somebody else's hard work,
yeah,
to make their money, you know, or rip them off and trick them or something. We're not looking when you know people like Raymond and I are talking about profit. We're not looking to rip anybody off or trick anybody. You know, if they don't feel they came out ahead, we'll swap back. You know,
yeah.
Give us what you bought, and we'll give you your money back, or we'll give you your resources back that you traded us for whatever it was. And you can go on your way. You know, go find a better deal. Yeah. You know.
And that's why I've been kind of really apprehensive because, you know, there's folks out there in the alternative energy, they're not really researchers. They're sort of researchers because they try to research in ways to either rip you off or deceive you.
Oh, God, yeah.
And, you know, that's not what we're about here. You're not going to see us try to sell you some alternative energy device. If we come up with the holy grail of free energy, we're going to put it right out there for you. That's it. You know, and you take a run with it. You know, as far as maybe we can help you build something like that and, you know, 3D print something or, you know, help you build a part and, you know, whatever. You know, that's an honest way to make money. We put some parts together because maybe you can't put them together or whatever like that. You see what I'm saying there, Thomas?
Yeah, that's what I told you before. My idea was, you know, I come up with something that's patentable. I'm going to patent it so that big corporations can't tell little guys they can't build it and make a little bit of money.
Yeah.
You know, you got a guy in a neighborhood who has got a little machine shop, and I come up with some technology that he can he can make for himself and his neighbors and whatnot. My idea is I'd put a limit on how much money you can make per month or something like that per person that's in the organization.
Yeah.
And, you know, put a cap on that. That way if GE comes along, they want to use it or they want the patent or something like that, they're going to have to pay dearly because I'm going to invest all that money into setting up labs all over the place where people can develop and design. And if they come up with something good and they want to do the same thing I did, then, you know, help them out getting it, you know. People to teach them how to go through the process and a little money to fund them to get on it, you know. The more money we can get from the big guys down into the little guys' hands, the more we can get those big guys to hand over some tools and materials to those little guys that the little guys ain't got.
Yeah.
You know?
And if you got the tools, man, you can get things done. That's why I was trying to get, you know, people to network with each other because, you know, I got a lot of tools. I don't have all the tools I need, but maybe your toolbox and my toolbox together makes a shop. You know?
Well, and like I said before, too, hey, here's another term. People take the term as a negative form, but it's only negative whenever it's enforced on something that has, a feeling about it, right? And that's slavery. You have a computer in front of you. By all accounts and purposes, that computer is a slave to you. But that computer doesn't have any feelings. So it doesn't want to go out and hang out Saturday night and get drunk on, you know, at the local bar. Okay? If it had, you know, I mean, I don't know, you could say, oh, it's happy doing what it's doing, but the fact is it can't even be happy. It's just a machine. And, you know, the tools that I'm working on, I want to incorporate more and more capability into them that people normally have to do and maybe even go beyond the human capability. Because the only way you can get something done while you rest is if you have a slave to do it. And right now, we're slaving away for that almighty dollar just to, you know, make ends meet. We can get enough tools working for us. We don't have to slave away for that anymore. The tools will do the work for us, you know.
Really?
I've never known a tool that showed up drunk, you know, drunk to work or, you know, showed up late to work because because it was basically too busy out, you know, chasing his wife or, you know, hanging out with the boys down at the fishing hole.
Yep.
You know?
Well, and that's another one of the things that gets me frustrated about, you know, the day and age that we're living in. And, you know, like I keep saying about how we're living in 2016 going on 2017. And
Flying cars?
Yeah, oh. We could be so much further along in technology to where everybody's lifestyle could be pleasant, you know. I mean, there's no reason for people not to have heating and cooling and, you know, fresh water. There's no excuse for that outside of greed. And so if by the alternative energy community and research alternative medicines and stuff like that, if we can put ideas out there to help benefit somebody's life, you know, that's a good thing. But the best case scenario would be that the whole world got their act together and started making sure that everyone was cared for.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That'd be a lot of less crime, there'd be a lot of less craziness, a lot of less self-medicated people out there if the world could just get their act together. It's not like we don't have the tools, the technology, and the knowledge. It's just that certain people out there want the whole piece of the, you know, they want the whole pie. They don't want just a piece of it.
They want their cake, and they want to come over and eat yours, too.
Yeah.
And that's what they did with the whole banking fiasco over the housing crisis in 2008. Bailed the banks out and let them keep the people's houses. And they could have solved that whole problem that they're worried about, the banks being insolvent. The banks are insolvent because they've got tons of loans out there that haven't been paid back. Give the people a check that goes directly to the bank to pay for their house. Now the people get their house and the banks get their money to get bailed out.
Yep.
But no, you know, there weren't enough individuals that had houses that got together and said, hey, this is what we want, and put the thumb screws on the politicians to make them do it. Instead, there are a couple really big, powerful entities that put the thumb screws on them to get what they wanted instead.
You know, there was a system before money ever came around where people would, like, trade things for things that they needed, you know. I might have some sugar, you might have some salt. You
right.
Some,
yeah, the act is trading. The process to come about the decision is barter.
Yeah. And so, you know, you think about this in an honest form. If there was no money involved in the world, if all you had was whatever your products you made that you'd you know, trade some wheat for some water or whatever. I don't know. Not that's a bad example. Everybody should have fresh water, but you know, maybe some wheat for some corn or something like that. You know.
Oh, you're trading wheat for somebody to move the water around to, you know, do something you need it done need done with. I mean, you might even have the well on your land.
I need some nails and
You give somebody wheat to help you go out there and get that water out to the next batch of wheat. You know.
I need some nails to patch up my house, and I got some extra 2x4s, and so I swap you some 2x4s for some nails, and we both walk away happy. That's what I'm saying, you know.
Government frowns on that because they can't. There's no way they can tax that.
Well, that's that's a good way to get back at the government is to go out there and barter with your friends and neighbors. Just
good
trade straight
across. A good way to treat the portion of the government that's just as greedy and selfish as the one that basically shut your the part of the electric company that shut your power off, didn't care that you guys were going without.
Yep. That's why if we the people really exercise the power of the sleeping giant, there, you know, wouldn't be no stopping us. Because, you know, what tools I got, I can work for you, and we can swap products and stuff like that, you know, kind of do it like they did in the old days and leave the money system to all the foolish individuals.
Best way to do that is to start by networking.
Yep.
Got to start networking so you guys can know what's going on in each other's minds when it comes to what you guys are trying to accomplish as a whole, or I say us people, you know, we the people, like you said before, you know.
Yep.
Stop being a disorganized group of randomly milling around, bumping into each other at random entities like a cloud of gas particles, and start moving in one direction to solve a problem like the gas particles coming out of a jet engine.
Yeah, if you actually look at ants, how the ants actually function as a unit, you know, I'm not saying that everybody has to have the same mind or anything like that, but they get a lot of work done, you know, and they're all provided for. They take care of each other.
Hey, there's if you do your due diligence, there's research where 80% of the hive is down in the ground, just standing still, hanging out, being taken care of.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a welfare state with them like most people think of where, you know, they're never going to do any work. I think those guys are, that's why if you start killing ants that are coming into your house, you just get more ants. They just keep coming and keep coming and keep coming. The only way to stop a hive is to kill a queen before, in order to be able to deplete the amount of ants that are coming to your house.
Yep.
You got to kill the source that's producing the ants from that hive, or otherwise she'll keep pumping them out, and she's already got so many out there that are standing waiting, ready to go. The second the call is made, hey, we have fallen soldiers, we need to replace them, they go into action, you know?
Yeah.
Go get that food, you know?
That's pretty wild.
It's a war. It's a war against starvation,
and
you know?
Maybe it could also be, you know, that as hard as you think them ants are working, they're actually just leisure, you know? Because
they have one speed. That's why they always look like they're... you know, like they're always such a tough worker, but they don't have any way to lounge. They're either off or they're on. You know, they're binary.
Yep.
So
it's amazing. You can learn a lot from nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think.
And if you start replacing the work that you're trying to get yourself done with something that can do it without complaining because it doesn't have any feelings,
well,
it doesn't get tired.
What
Why
do you
not?
Think it would do to that system of ants if you had a greedy crowd in there?
Like a group of politicians and market parents?
Mm-hmm.
But hold on. Do we really want that sugar? It's red. Let's get the sugar that's purple. Well, no. The new popular color is orange. Let's get the sugar that's orange. You know. Well, we're not down with that because, you know, that's all unhealthy. We only eat white sugar. No, none of those color contaminants because it's bad for you.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, the whole hive collapses.
So,
there's actually, I don't remember Hitchhiker's Guide, but which from the universe that the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy came from, the Douglas Adams universe, which book it's from, but there's one thing that always stands out in my mind is that a group of humans, according to one of his books, went back in time, and you'd think maybe they were the ones that started the human race, but they ended up dying out because it was a group of marketing analysts and lawyers, and they couldn't figure out what color to make the wheel before they invented it. So they ended up never having a wheel so that they could get work done to survive. And the monkey still ended up taking over.
Huh. Well, there you go, man. I would put the, if the world, we the people of the world decided to put our minds and our talents and skills and tools together, there would be no stopping us from how far we could go.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And see, that's another problem about government, was you put all your trust and, you know, I'm not anti-government, I'm anti-corruption. There was a place for government. If it was done properly and for its initial purpose, then you're okay. Keep everybody safe. Keep everybody in line. Somebody's organizing the deal. But it usually ends in failure because they start thinking that they know better for you than you know for yourself.
Yeah.
And so with
it's
that
called
said,
the nanny state.
Yep. And so with that said, if we the people actually took and used our talents and skills together, there ain't no need for no government, you know? It's,
Hey, you're going to get more extra viewers than you got from saying, bomb!
Yeah.
Bomb!
Yeah, because...
we don't need the government. All of a sudden, hey, and here's the thing, you can get, you don't yell it. If you really want extra viewers, you go, bomb!
Yep. So,
oh, they got to be up to no good. They've been whispering. They're whispering. What are you guys whispering about over there?
Even the government can learn something from this conversation, man. You know, when you hear stories about how businesses will charge the military, you know, $500 for a hammer, you know, or. And if you got a government willing to pay that kind of money for a hammer or a wrench or whatever, that's ridiculous. You wouldn't do that in your own household, so why would you do that, you know, to your nation? You know, it's a lot of greed that makes a mess out of everything. And if we got access to technology such as what we're talking on right now, and we can't do better than this, I'm sad for humanity. You know, if somebody out there is sitting in the cold or the, you know, the heat and can't be comfortable and live a decent life, you know.
What's the point?
Yeah, it's all this is wasted. You know, you got right now, you got access to the vast sum of all of humanity's knowledge. That's what my friend Steve says all the time.
Yep.
And instead, you got people out there playing, you know, games or Candy Crunch or, you know, talking trash to each other. I know that everybody out there isn't a thinker, but they should be, you know. And if they were, they wouldn't have to sit around and complain about how miserable life was. Because
right.
If everybody used their talents, you could actually have a job, do a job that you loved, you know, as opposed to one you hate, slaving at the factory or working in the coal mine or something like that. Figure out
right.
better ways to mine the coal if you're going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to use it, if you're really seriously concerned about the environment, then help
find another way.
Yeah. Help those free thinkers who are talking about using water or static or, you know, thermal or whatever. This earth is beautiful. And it is a thermoelectric generator, a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. More energy than we could use in a trillion, trillion lifetimes. And so with that said, if we actually took the time to pay attention to what we learned in basic science and from nature itself, it wouldn't be no talk of global warming / climate change due to man-made carbon emissions.
Which, speaking of paying attention, do you notice we had a new call, new night in here?
let me see.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Raymond. How's it going?
Pretty daggone good once I got past the bad part.
The bad part?
Yeah. Thomas sent me a call, I couldn't see it, and all of a sudden, after about 30 minutes, I look up and say, uh-oh. it's rough to be blind in one eye.
Mm.
With a 50-inch monitor, duh, you got to search all over the place. All right, what the subject was?
I don't know, what haven't we been talking about?
Well,
I think the big thing is we've been pushing the networking and, you know, investigating, you know, be a scientific detective, you know, go out there and try stuff, see what you can find out. Don't just, you know,
sit around
boo-hoo about things not being done. Don't be a market analyst and worried about the color of it, whether people like it because it ain't the color that you want. Make it work. If it works, you can worry about color later, man.
I want people to take these ideas that we share with them and see how far they can take them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that says, well, you know, this is all over my head, you know? It's not. You know, if you understand basics of anything, then you're a lot more advanced than you think you are. You know, I talk about electronics and plumbing being, you know, and electricity, you know, basically being the same thing because they are. You know, in electronics, you got resistors, you got essentially valves that you open and close to allow flow of energy. Same thing with water. You're moving water with volume or pressure or whatever, you know. If you can understand how they function, then you could figure out, what could you do with that, you know? You know the wind, it'll shove you over. If it's high enough in your neighborhood, it'll shove your house over. You know, there's some places they call Tornado Alley that, you know, you could monopolize on that terrible weather. Get that weather to spin some giant turbine up and put enough energy into the power grid for somebody. If you guys over there got thermal vents and we got wind over here and somebody's got the waves of the ocean slapping on the shores, then we designed our power grid to be smart. You could send power from Texas. We could send power to you from Missouri. And it don't matter what time or day it is. you're always going to have a constant flow of energy coming through that power grid.
We've got the power grid. That's the thing. All we got to do is come up with the ways to feed it back into the grid so that we don't need whatever way it is that they're worried about using, like using nuclear fuel. If everybody was producing a little more power than they needed, they could do it. All the people who don't have enough power would still have the power they need, and the power company would get paid for just shuttling it to them.
Yeah,
they wouldn't make as much money as they make selling them power because they're not paying for the power they're making. They're using a government subsidy to pay for it, and then they get to reap all the profits from it.
Yeah. Think about the hydroelectric dams. You know, how much power it actually takes to turn those turbines, to turn the generators, you know. How much power that actually, how much force is actually has to be generated to make that happen. But then, take a big step back and look at that dam while it's in action and see how much power is still flowing by that you ain't using. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There are.
That's why I said you look at the water that's flowing down a river. Yet water is not. If you look on the surface of the water and it's actually moving from one direction to the other, it's not glass smooth. The water is bubbling. It's, you know, rippling. And if you learn how to use that force to generate power like you do with the shake light, you could literally line the walls of the river and the bottom of the river and collect power as the water flows over it without having anything in the way of the flow of the water, so that you're not interfering with, say, you know, fish trying to swim upstream so they can spawn. That way there'll be more fish the next year. More fish there are, the more food there is, you know.
Don't
interfere with the food and still get the power.
Not to mention that process you're talking about, if done properly, would actually stop erosion from eating into your ground that you want to use.
Yep.
See,
you get triple benefit out of it.
Where there's a will, there's a way. You know, mm-hmm. And that hydroelectric dam, it didn't stop the water. It's almost like water has a brain, you know. And water says, you know, you put something in my way, and I'm going to go around you, over you, under you, whatever. You ain't stopping me, you know.
Right. Well, that's an indication there is no brain, because it continues doing what it's doing no matter what it faces. It'll keep trying until it gets there. You do that to a person, it'll give up. It's too hard. I'm just going to go ahead and watch TV.
Yep.
You know,
the only way to contain that water is to put it into a container, but you ain't going to contain all of it, that's for sure.
Well, you can't contain, I don't know. You can't contain it all. If you have the power to build a planet, I mean, we're contained all the water that's on the Earth.
Well, yeah, I guess if you could build a big enough jar, you could put it all.
Yeah. You build a big enough jar, you don't have to have walls on the outside, because the gravity will act as a pull to pull it down into a central wall in the center.
A big, giant Dyson sphere.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If it's big enough, it doesn't need to be a wall around it.
Yep.
Because the energy of the gravitational force will hold it where it's at. You know what I'm saying?
Now, what Thomas is trying to say is we already have the jars, and they're already full of water. They're called the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean.
Yep.
The Indian Ocean. I mean, come on. We've already got the jars and they're already full.
Yep.
I mean, they're doing exactly what Thomas said.
And, you know, we know the basics. Water will always find its level, and it'll always find the cracks and the crevices, and you freeze water, it'll expand and bust its way out again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we know how to crack stone with cold, we know how to crack stone with heat, we know how to crack stones with sound, and world.
Somebody else we know is saying he's using magnetism to crack it.
Well, if he can vibrate the molecules
magnets
to focus it, then, you know, like I said, there's so much energy potential in this world, it's just ridiculous. You know, the basics, like I said, that nature's going to balance itself out. So you tip that balance, and on the way back you get work done. I mean, it's like Raymond's two-stage oscillator. When he gets it started, he's lifting a 60-pound weight on the other side just by pushing his finger, just barely touching it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Keep it in motion.
And actually, she says that the last time I operated the machine, was picking up 180 pounds.
Well, see, that's even better.
With thumbs.
You talking about the one that was made out of wood?
No, I'm talking about the one, the big one that I built that's outside.
Now,
okay.
If you had
180 pounds with the power of your thumb moving 2 inches.
See, if you had a 180-pound freestanding weight and you sat there and bench pressed that for several hours, you wouldn't make it. Yeah, but the fact that you can sit there and use your thumb to sit there and just push it every so often and get that going, you know, that's impressive. That's ingenious. That's what I'm talking about. That's the taking it, seeing how far you can actually take that. Now, let's say you exchange instead of your thumb, now you just got a little electric relay that kicks on and off, you know, every so often. You see what I mean? And it's doing what your thumb would have been doing. There's a phrase: work harder or work smarter, not harder.
Yeah,
that's my favorite phrase.
Yeah,
think of all.
Unless you've been watching Evil Dead, then it's shoot once, think never.
That's why I always said that I would rather hire the smart lazy man if I was a business owner, so that I could observe how he finds ways to
get the work done without having to work hard.
Yeah.
Yep. Hey, if you're worried about the nature of the lazy nature of humanity, don't. Because the lazy nature of humanity is what creates things like cell phones and remote controls.
Yeah, you don't want to walk or ride a horse clear across town to talk to Raymond, so you call him up.
Pick up a phone and have a conversation. That's all you're going to do is talk.
Yep.
Pick up the phone, you know. And now we've got, you know, the internet and video capability. We're, you know, moving towards 3D printing capability. So, I mean, if I want to help you build something and you have the machine to do it on your end, all I got to do is help you design it so the machine can basically put out whatever it is that you need to put out, you know.
Yep. Back in the day, they used a team of horses or mules to plow with a big metal plow and somebody, some guy on there guiding it and pulling it the hard way. And nowadays you got huge combines that have global positioning in them. Some of these combines, all you have to really do is sit inside there and keep an eye on stuff, and the combine does the rest of the work. I mean, it's brilliant. Have you ever sat inside of one of the new combines? Either one of you guys?
I've seen them. I haven't sat in one.
I'm telling you what, if you ever get an opportunity, if you're driving by and you see one of those tractor supply places with the new combines out there,
go check it out.
John Deere, yeah, just go up in there and look inside those cabs, and I'm telling you what, you're going to be amazed. You know, when you sit back and you think about where farming was to where farming is, then, and you look inside that cab, you got the equivalence of a F-16 or a stealth fighter for the Air Force for the farmer. You know, you get a lot of work done with those huge combines. That, you know, right now I've actually seen, when we were during the last harvest last year, I actually seen a traffic jam of tractor trailers at the silos where they're dropping off their harvest. Now, they were able to grow and harvest more grain than that doggone silo could actually hold. They had a pile out on the ground that they had to use a huge, massive tarp to cover this pile up because they couldn't fit another grain in those silos. And that's unimaginable compared to the old farming methods back in, you know, several hundred years or more back, as opposed to now. One farmer can farm thousands of acres using the modern day equipment. You see what I mean? That's the difference.
Man, that sounded like that was in the room here with me. He must have the air conditioner turned off, because I don't hear it at all.
That was the microwave.
Yeah.
when it beat, that was my microwave heating up.
Literally, guys, if you get an opportunity to go to one of them farming equipments, look up inside the cab of those doggone new combines, and you're going to freak. It's not like sitting out on an old 1950s tractor in the heat with a little umbrella over the top of your head to keep from getting sunburned. These are air-conditioned, AM/FM radio, global positioning, comforts of home. Nice. It's
the guy's just there to basically make sure if something goes wrong that it continues doing what it's supposed to.
Yep.
I'm glad you mentioned the global positioning in the farm equipment, because that is utterly fantastic. Once that he get in and start it up and push a couple of buttons, the guy just sits back, and if he wants to, he can go to sleep, but he shouldn't, because something could happen. But the only reason that you even need the driver in the thing is if something happens. You know, that's all.
Other than that,
he just pushes a button, gets it going, and just kicks back and relax. Pops his feet up.
Like I said, he can relax because he has a massive slave to do work for him that has no feelings, no thoughts, no concerns, no desires. It just does what it's built to do, you know?
Exactly.
Nothing wrong with that, because it's just a machine. Right. The more machines we build as slaves for us, the more people will be free, you know?
But somebody in a whole lot of somebodies in the history of this world started off working by hand and found easier ways to do it. Nowadays, roofing companies, they don't use hammers as much as they used to use back in the old days. Back in the old days, it was hammers and nails, and nowadays it's air compressors and nail guns, you know. And they can rip right through a roof like you wouldn't believe.
Southampton, you keep talking about over unity as if it actually exists.
Well,
it does. That is over unity. When you take one tool and build a better tool with it.
Yep.
Or build a tool that with a pound of something can harvest a ton of that something.
Yes.
Well, I got
a steam shovel.
I got good news for you, and maybe better news. Remember, I had a drain problem, right?
Yeah.
Well, the problem I had with the drain was that the doggone plunger wouldn't fit that drain. And it drove me insane because there wasn't no way to plunge it. And so I tried using every harsh chemical under the sun in order to try to get that drain to unclog. After I failed, I used everything from sulfuric acid to muriatic acid plus a little bit of the hydrogen peroxide. Everything. And nothing worked. Right. I couldn't get this drain to unstop. Now, I probably dissolved a lot of crud down in that drain, but it took a simple, a ridiculously simple solution in order for me to resolve that. I made what I'm coining the phrase plunger donut. All right. Essentially, if you can visualize the drain trap in the shower, or the old style buildings anyway, the floor drains, and your plunger don't fit down in there right, you know, on certain sizes of those drains, so you can't really plunge it. So there's a little metal grate that goes over the top of it. I took the metal grate, I drew on a piece of paper a circle around it to measure the size, and I found a piece of plastic that already had a hole in the center of it that was just the perfect size for that. Stuck that down there where the drain plate goes, put the plunger right in the middle of that donut, and plunged that sucker, and it opened right up.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah. I got rid of that demon clog. But that's something that could be 3D printed, man. You could 3D print a plunger donut, and for those guys that you hear have a problem like I had trying to get the drain to go down,
solve it for him.
There it is. It's resolved.
Yeah.
3D printer. He's talking up our alley, isn't he, Thomas?
Yep.
And I looked online. So far, I haven't seen no plunger donut for sale, you know. So maybe it's still a marketable idea. And even if it gets patented, it don't not stop you from, you know, passing around a doggone 3D file that somebody can print their own if they need one.
You patent it to sell to people who are too lazy to make it for themselves.
Yeah.
Everybody that's willing to make it for themselves or get together with their friends and get somebody to help them make it, let them have it.
But I had a problem that I couldn't get resolved, and between talking to you guys and troubleshooting this in my mind, I finally found a solution. There's, you know, like Raymond just said, necessity is the mother of invention, and persistence paid off. I had to get it resolved. I needed it done, and I figured out a solution, and that's, everybody has that capability. If you take these little anomalies that we're talking about, all these things that we talk about, everything from piezoelectrics to thermoelectrics, you run with those ideas. See how far you can take them. And if you got an idea and you're not sure whether or not somebody's already tried it, ask anybody in the alternative energy community. They'll say, look, this is what I ran into. Maybe you could figure out a different way around this process. But by networking together, you know, putting these pieces of the puzzle, you could solve something that I couldn't see even when I was standing there looking at it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole key. That's the purpose of this network. It's an open platform for you guys to come here and talk to researchers and amongst each other. We got people in the chat room that are awesome because they post links to radio shows that, you know, things that we may have missed or whatever, or things relevant to the subject. And so, you know, if you have the opportunity, jump over there to the superchat.html at shazizradio.com and join in. You might learn something, you know? Mm-hmm. And you might be able to add something to the mix. I'm sure, you know, it seems like every single time I meet anybody, I always learn something new, something that, like, you know, a farmer from this side of the fence over there tells a farmer, hey, this is how I figured out how to pump water out of my well. And, you know, hey, I never thought of that. You see? But it wasn't like nobody had ever thought about it before, because all the problems in the world, I'm sure that a lot of people contemplated on how to do it. Knowledge is pretty valuable, man. Put as much as you can in your head. That's what I'm saying.
You know, you just shared something with the world about you had a problem.
Yeah.
And some people might say, well, that's silly. But it's not silly. There's people out there that have the same daggone problem. So I want to put my 2 cents worth in. I had a drain problem years ago. I mean, I fought that sucker every way you can imagine. And finally, my solution was I just got some rags, the garden hose, shoved the garden hose down in the drain, packed the super wet rags around as tight as I could get them, and just opened it up wide open for about a split second, and it just blew that clog right out of there.
Well, see, that's brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, so there's ways to do it. But I suggest this, if you're going to use that water pressure, go up underneath if you can get there, and your gooseneck, make sure they're really tight, because if they're not, you could blow them loose. But other than that, it will clear the drain. Okay.
Oh, wow, check this out. See, now, I'll tell you what, man. Stephen Gibbons, I love that guy. He's brilliant. There's already a deal on the market. We was talking about plunger donuts. But there's already a deal on the market, but it's not called a plunger donut. It's made by Fisher Price, a brilliant basic rock a stack. It's got like these plastic donuts. You ever seen those little stackable rings that you put on this little peg thing for the little kids to play with?
Yeah, I know.
The bottom one on it looks like it's big enough for a plunger to fit in. And there's several different sizes, so there's a toy that can get some work done.
Right.
So,
you know, so I don't know who makes it or if they even make it and sell it anymore, but they used to sell a can that had a round ball on the end, and it was open. It was a rubber ball, and it was really firm, and it was full of air. The can was roughly about the size of a baseball. The rubber ball on the end was about the size of a softball, so it would fit almost any drain. The canister was full of compressed air, and the button was on the bottom of the can. So you just turn the can upside down, put a little bit of water in the sink. Of course, it's stopped up, right? So you can. And that gives you a good seal. And you just put this thing down over the drain, mash it down really tight, and push the button, and it releases a burst of air. And whatever water is in that drain just goes down and creates pressure.
Yep.
A genius device. You know, if you live in an apartment and don't have a garden hose, duh, that'll work.
Well, see, you know, things like that and what Stephen, I love that stuff, man, because Stephen just took and he ran through his mind a bunch of different things that are already on the market that could be actually used for different purposes, you know, repurposing things out there. I mean, that's brilliance. Shoving the rag around the garden hose and using that water pressure to actually push it. There's 40 to 60 PSI in a garden hose. And so that's more than enough to bust a clog out.
Think about this a minute. What if you live in an apartment and you don't have access to a garden hose? Well, you've got a buddy of yours that's got an air compressor. You get one of the nozzles that you just push the button and it blows air out of a little long tube. You just go to the hardware store or whatever and buy a rubber ball, shove that hose, that pipe through that ball, put the ball down over the drain and hit the hose.
Yeah, and why couldn't you use the same sink that's clogged if you had an adapter to screw a hose right straight to the doggone sink and then put it down inside the sink, clamp it up, and then turn the water on. Force that water pressure to shove the clog through.
You got it.
See?
That would do it.
Now, there's a marketable item right there. You know, all you got to do, because there's a certain type of, if you ever messed around with a faucet, if you ever put any faucets in and out, there's actually a little screen inside a little ring that basically you can unscrew that cap to clear out any rocks or calcium buildup that will actually start to change the flow of your water. There's a little screen that catches any particulates that come down the water pipe. So that you know.
You mentioned that because I live in a place where, well, I had a well, and the well would pump up water, of course, and it didn't have a filter on it. So I did actually get little bitty rocks in my filters.
Yep.
On the faucet. And just all you have to do is when the water starts slowing down, you just unscrew that thing, you turn it around backward, and force water through it.
Yep. And you can turn you can go to the hardware store and you could buy a hose that is already specifically set up that will fit that little deal when you unscrew it on your sink deal.
Right.
And you could build you a basically a pressure deal that you can actually stick the cork down inside there in your drain. And then turn the water on full blast, and you know, on the hot water side would melt some of the soap, and basically use that pressure to unclog that doggone drain.
You know, it wouldn't be that hard. Somebody wants to get fancy with it, they could put one of those cameras that they have, and they use it to go inside bodies, and they also use it to go down gun barrels to look inside them to see what's going on in there.
I got one of those cameras.
And then run a couple lines with a lever to basically control the flow going to them.
Yep.
Maybe a way to drain it back out, an opening to drain it back out, so that you could put two or three smaller tubes together, do the whole thing up out of like surgical tubing, so you could make it bend and twist around while it's down in there and see what's going on while you're doing it, so you can knock everything loose if you have to.
Yeah, use like
And then put the water jet on the end.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say. Jet it where you can literally sit there and use the water pressure to
laser cut
the material out.
Yep, if it's roots, you can literally laser cut those roots right out of there without having to put any chemicals down there at all.
Yep,
just water.
That's brilliant, man. See, now we just gave you multiple examples of what it is that we're trying to get people to think about and motivate. You know, with these anomalies, we just sat here and gave you some multi-million-dollar ideas right there. You go market them, man. Get rich.
I mean, yeah, it's common, ordinary problems that people face every day.
Yeah.
And we just come up with several solutions. You know, and other people could do the same thing. I wish we could get more people to come in on the show.
So do I.
Normal, everyday problems that, you know, people don't know what to do about. So everybody comes up with a different solution, and one of them is going to work for somebody.
Yep, troubleshoot a everybody come together and start troubleshooting stuff. You'd be surprised at how many things that people, you know, might think about that others didn't even consider. Right. You know? And so we just sat here and strategically built something and then turned around and not only did that, took it to the advanced mode to now it's got a camera and a basically a powerful water jet on there that, you know, heck, they got water picks that clean your in between your teeth, right? where the toothbrush can't go. That was brilliant, don't you think?
Yeah, heck yeah.
So there's think tanks that companies hire all the time to sit around and do exactly what we just did for everybody for free.
There you go. I like that free stuff.
Yeah. This is what we're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, the idea is free. You got to do the work to make it happen. And what I was talking about before is you, instead of using a big hose that takes up most of the drain, you use one smaller hose to force the water through. When you're ready, you turn it on and off to blast stuff out of the way. But you've got several hoses running down there that have, like, they basically make it with a wire wrapped around inside the hose so it won't expand. It can handle pressure. And then you cinch down at the end some, like, surgical tubing over the end of that so that when you push pressure into it, it's sealed off on the end. That surgical tubing will expand like a balloon and stiffen up.
Yeah.
And you put like three of those around the outside of it so that way you can use that for triangulation to move that around. When you relieve and increase the pressure, it'll cause it to bend and twist around. They use that for drilling for oil. They literally drill straight down and then they start pumping water down into different bladders around that thing that expand like a balloon and cause that drill bit at the end to bend and flex around, and they can drill all underneath the ground sideways to look for oil without having to drill a new hole all the way down there.
Yep.
That way, if they don't hit that pocket just right, they can turn that thing around and hit it, and the oil doesn't care. It'll come up that hole, whether it's, you know, shaped like a knot or if it's just a straight hole going straight down in there.
You're right about that.
There's
liquid. It doesn't care. It's just going to take a path of least resistance.
Yep.
There's so many different ways that you could make an advancement on this deal. You know, using vacuum pressure, you could pull some of the crud out. You could see the clog. So you hit a vacuum on the thing, and it yanks the clog backwards, and then you hit a forward pressure and shoots it on down the doggone pipe.
Hey, speaking of that, okay, forget the water and all the other stuff. Run a transducer down there and shake it loose with frequency.
Yeah, why not?
Vibrate it until it all busts up in little bitty pieces and flushes through.
Build you a little, not a nanobot, but a little small bot that will fit right down the drain and can't get jammed up. Basically a ball that will go down inside the drain with a battery in the doggone thing. You throw it down the drain and it'll chew all the way through the other side. And whenever it
right.
hits
a couple some, different types of tools that it can use. There's already water down there. That's why you've got a problem, is that the water's backed up and can't go through. Let it circulate the water that's down there. Give it a pump so it can actually suck water in and blow it out the other end and blast that thing loose.
Yep. Little smart guy that whenever it meets resistance, it'll back up, and then when it resistance goes off, it'll run forward again.
Clear it all out, yep. Heck, if you got something like that and it can survive off of some sort of decomposition process that's going on down there to generate electricity, you could leave one or two of them down there. It could be working on the drain from the other end, the backup, while the ones that you dropped in there to knock it loose could knock it loose from their end until they meet in the middle.
You know, I visualize a future where literally robots will be running around mowing your grass and sweeping up the leaves or whatever.
Hey, self-healing technology. You rip your car seat, this car seat just heals right back up. Little machines that basically repair the seat. You no longer have to worry about the car ever breaking down. You could literally sell cars with came up with a new warranty. It's called the Dynasty Warranty. It's warranted against falling apart or defects and whatnot for the lifetime of your family line.
That will never happen. It's possible, it's there, the technology's there, but trust me, that will never happen. They make money on selling cars.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make money selling you.
No, if they did it, they would charge so much that your great great grandchildren would still be paying the loan off.
Oh heck yeah. Oh heck yeah.
Well, you know
people would do it though if they knew they could depend on that car to be ready to take them to work every day.
What they probably would do is not sell you the car, but lease you the car.
Yeah.
Because it would never wear out.
Yep.
If I had one, I wouldn't sell it.
The car company.
I still wouldn't sell it. I'd lease it to somebody.
Right. The car once you could afford them.
You know, the wealthy elite of the world, they want to be rich and they want to be able to, have anything they want, anytime they want it. But in the perfect world, you could do that anyway. But everybody could do that,
Yep. then you can't show off what you've got that someone else doesn't have what the problem is. We have a sickness that people have that issue. They're not happy if they don't have something somebody else does.
Yep, it all has to be the fanciest, and you got to look better. Keeping up with the Joneses craziness.
Well, you only have to keep up with the Joneses because the Joneses are constantly trying to outdo you.
Yeah.
Hey, you got the Joneses keeping up with the Kennedys, and the Kennedys are keeping up with the Joneses. So the only people winning are the corporations selling them the plastic junk that looks nice and shiny and pretty when they first get it, but then it breaks down later.
Well,
it's like they learned nothing from the Native Americans that got ripped off, selling an entire island of land for a couple beads.
Yeah,
they're doing it to them again. Smarten up. If you want a better world, you've got to evolve as a consumer to match the evolution that's been going on in the corporations. Start your own business.
Yes,
Hey, that's funny. When I got to Texas, I had a really good job. Worked there for about 4 or 5 months, and I did a lot of things that was not in my job description that made the company a lot of money. Now, I didn't expect to get paid for it. I was just doing my job. I didn't expect to get a pat on the back, thank you, or extra money in my check. But the fact that I didn't, the fact that the guy never even recognized what I was doing, it ticked me off. I quit my job. So I went around trying to find a job, and everybody wanted to start me off at $8 an hour, and if I worked really hard and did a good job in 6 months, they'd give me a 50-cent raise. And I said, the heck with that. But I just, like Thomas said, I just said, the heck with it. Started my own business. Hired myself.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, there's a solution right there, If you're going to look out there and you're going to complain about life and not even try to make the attempt to make your life even a little bit better, or even make it a little bit better for others around you, then you're just going to be at the mercy of the way that things are, the status quo, so to speak, that you don't know how to work on your car, so you got to pay somebody to do it,
The people that sit around and complain all the time, the only thing they succeed in doing is alienating people around them so to the point they don't even want to talk to them because they don't do anything but complain.
Yeah.
Stop complaining and start doing something about what you're complaining about.
Well,
I've never helped a thing.
It's like all these folks that go out and protest save the planet. It bothers me because all the energy that they use to go out there to save the planet, not only did they make themselves look foolish, but they didn't get nothing accomplished because the status quo is the corporations still pollute and people are still driving gas vehicles, and it's not going to change, You got yourself thrown up in jailhouse for protesting in the wrong place in the wrong manner when you could have been out there, cleaning up a creek or planting a tree.
That's amazing what you just said. You think about this. You got 1,500 people out here walking up and down the street, yelling and hollering obscenities and holding up signs. They're spending all this energy. Why don't they just go down to the river they're talking about and start picking up some daggone trash?
Yeah.
That would say more to other people than all the signs in the world and all the marching in the world and say, hey, maybe I need you out there and help these people. I mean, they're right.
You're right, Randall.
It is dirty. Let's put on our dirty jeans and go out there and clean this place up. Then you have a right. Then you have an even bigger right to complain about the factories that are dirtying the rivers.
You hit the nail on the head, Raymond, because, you know, people have a tendency to want to join other people when they're doing something, you know. If you see that you got a crowd of people over there, they're having a great time, they're picking up trash, but they're still having a great time, you know, and you go over and, hey, that's a pretty good idea, you're going to get more positive attention by doing that than you would be out there with your little wooden stick and paper sign saying save the trees.
Right. Think about it. Think about it. I mean, they're out there, these people are laughing, and they're picking up dirty stuff and, you know, throwing mud balls at each other and just laughing, having a good time. Well, here's this little old lady and little old man that they love to cook, and they don't have the energy to go out there and crawl around in this mud and slop. So they go out there and cook their favorite barbecue or their favorite spaghetti sauce or whatever. And next thing you know, it turns into a humongous picnic, and everybody wants to do it once a month.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. And you're cleaning up the world. This world, marching around with signs, you're wasting a lot of energy. And you're wasting good paper and good wooden sticks.
And man, I'll tell you what, there's folks out there...
Put your energy to good use.
There's folks out there like Steven that are really good at finding links and stuff and researching stuff on the internet. If you had the willpower and the people that would be wanting to get things done, you could have somebody on the internet searching up information, and if you didn't know something, hey, you know, how do you know what certain chemical is safe to use with this chemical over here? In less than a few seconds, they already got the answer for you, you know?
Right.
The tools that we need to make this world awesome, we've had them, you know? Now it's time to get together, to network, like Thomas is always saying, and make it happen, you know? If you're worried about the planet, then fix it. You know, if your creek is dirty, then go down there and pull some old tires out of it. Recycle those tires. You know how many different things that you can do with recycled tires?
Yep.
Some people make planters out of them. Some people grind them up and use it to mix in with asphalt that they make roads with. You know, right. Some people have ideas to taking an old tire, because if you ever got in the back of a pickup truck in the middle of July and sat on an old tire at night after the whole day, after that tire had been out there during the whole day, you'll burn your biscuits. All right? The sun's done, went down, but that tire has saved some of that energy. And you thought it was cool to go ahead and sit down. Well, it wasn't cool yet. That was the problem. Now your biscuits are on fire. You see what I mean?
A lot of people don't even know, but in the average automobile tire, there are 3 quarts of oil per tire. You put that tire in a sealed unit and heat it, the oil will melt and run right out of it.
Yeah, and there's steel inside there that could be recycled.
Hey, we're talking some high-grade steel.
Yep. And
high-grade steel. You can turn right around and get the carbon black out of it and sell it right back to the tire company.
Imagine taking some thermal couples or some thermal piles or even Peltier elements for that matter. You know, inside the tire is going to be a temperature difference because it's not directly at the sun. So you'll have airflow through the center of the tire, while on the outside of the tire, it's going to absorb heat from the sun. And so you could literally glue some Peltier elements up inside an old car tire and set it out in the sun and generate electricity.
Yes. You know, I've got a laser thermometer. In fact, I've got 2 of them. But anyway, I went out a few years back on a day it was 20 degrees outside, but the sun was shining. So I shot the one side of my truck. It's really dark gray, the metal, and it read, like 30 degrees. Then I went around and shot the plastic on the black bumper that was in the shade, and it read about 40. Then I walked around to the sunny side of the truck, and I shot the tire with my laser thermometer, 140 degrees with no protection from the wind or nothing.
Yeah, 140 degrees is almost enough to, that's perfect for, heating your water.
Well, wait a minute. The Peltier device works on the difference in heat.
Yeah.
Duh. I mean, the tire was 140 degrees, ambient temperature was 20 degrees, that's 110 degrees different. You can get a lot of electricity off of Peltier device with that much different than temperature.
Now, imagine taking some copper tubing and filling the inside of a tire, an old tire, filling the inside of the old tire, and then shooting some expanding foam inside there, and sealing it all up, and then painting it all black, and setting that out in the sun. You just made a water heater out of a freaking tire.
Yep. Yeah, you did. Come to think of it.
Yeah. You know, so there you go, man. Look, try this sometime, even just a green garden hose. Go out there after it's been charged with water and setting out in the sun, and then feel the temperature of that water as it comes out of that hose before the cold water actually gets there. So you could turn a whole bunch of old tires that won't hold air anymore into a massive thermal generator that would actually heat your water for your house, man. You just circulate your water in and out your hot water tank, and you got water anywhere from 160 to 180 degrees
I've told several times about how I built a solar hot water heater for my in-laws down in Mexico that had 600 feet of black half-inch semi-rigid black plastic hose.
Yeah.
The water was so hot during the day, the water was so hot that it never cooled off. I mean, you could run the water all day long. It never ran out of hot water. But again, it was so hot, you had to add a little bit of cold water with it or it would blister you. Told a kid that was working for me about it. His girlfriend was working as a living maid with some really super rich people, and they had a big swimming pool in their backyard. And the guy was like me, he doesn't like cold water. And so this guy was working for me that I told him about it. He told that guy about it. That guy paid him to put my plastic hose on his roof of his house to heat his swimming pool. In 2 days, the swimming pool was so hot you couldn't get in it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a 5,000-7,000 gallon swimming pool.
There you go, man.
Actually, the swimming pool was it was an Olympic sized swimming pool, something like 60 or 80 feet long, about 20 or 30 feet wide, 10 feet deep at the deep end, 4 foot deep at the shallow end. Figure it out, folks. That's a lot of water. And they got it so hot, you couldn't get in and swim in it. It was hotter than a jacuzzi. Now, my jacuzzi, I always kept it 120 degrees. That's what I like.
Well, see, here's the thing. During the summertime, it's hot outside. You know, we got terrible weather over here. It gets cold or rainy season or whatever, you know, but during the times when it's hot outside and you got an old car tire that's actually supplementing your heat in your hot water tank, they're saving your electricity right there. You can put an old car tire out there in your yard and basically plant some plants in the doggone thing, you know, and that car tire is still generating heat, but the plants are doing fine. You know, and it don't look too bad. It looks kind of maybe redneckish, but hey, what, you got a redneck hot water heater that is actually keeping that element from having to kick on, which means your electric bill goes down.
The thing is, if you build a hot water heater, solar hot water heater collector,
yeah,
if you build it properly, it'll produce just as much hot water in the winter on a 20 degree day,
yeah,
as in the summer.
As long as the sun's out, as long as
the same amount of heat in the winter or summer, it does not make any difference. The only difference would be if you didn't insulate the backside and the edges, you know, the sides of it, then put glass over it so the wind can't get to it. It will produce the same energy, same amount of heat. It's identical. The sun doesn't care. You know, when it hits something black, it absorbs, it turns to heat.
You know, I was thinking about just yesterday about solar panels and how they actually function. You know, it's photons of light actually moving electrons inside the cells. But I would like to really get into a lot deeper understanding of how solar panels actually function, like which exact light spectrum that you can get a solar panel to charge. There's a guy that's out there on YouTube. He's doing some experiments on indoor solar panel testing. So that he's using like different types of LEDs to see how these solar panels are working or not. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And so if he's getting energy off of LEDs, then he's pretty close to the right spectrum to where he's almost mimicking sunlight. If you can mimic sunlight and be able to use those solar panels even at night, you see where I'm going there?
Yes, I do.
You know, like I said, the only stupid question is the unasked question, you know? And if you're sitting here thinking about the possibilities, you may just stumble on to the actual answer. And that's what it's all about, you know? We just told you how you can take an old car tire, which would have been a nuisance because it would have filled up with water, which in turn would have filled up with mosquitoes, which in turn would have drove you insane while you're trying to have your picnic. You could take that car tire, either run some copper tubing or some black hose tightly up inside there, and then insulate the deal so no water can get in there, and basically hold that heat like a thermos during the daytime, and even at partially into the night, which would at the very least supplement your electric bill. Now that I've talked about it, I've got some old tires out here, and I'm gonna have to go out and buy me some garden hose and some copper tubing and see which one of them will function better, and build one and do a video on it so that
you can see. I got an idea. You've got those solar panels I gave you?
Yeah.
Go ahead and fasten them to a metal frame that's only about an inch and a half wide. Cover the back. It's inexpensive as possible. Get a piece of plywood and waterproof it. Cover the back with that. Then waterproof where the wires connect up. And then fill that thing with water to put it out in the sun. And then what you do is you take it off the very top. So it's going to be on an angle to get it on the sun. At the top, you take a pipe and run it to the top of a reservoir. Higher than the solar panel. Then you come off the bottom of the water reservoir and go into the bottom of that solar panel tank that you built. What's going to happen is it's in the sun, solar panel is going to be making electricity, but the heat on the back side of the solar panel is going to heat the hot water. Now the fact that you got your reservoir higher than the solar panel, then you get thermal siphoning. As the water heats, it'll take the heat off the back side of the solar panel, causing the solar panel to produce more electricity than normal.
You know something that makes it even better than that?
You're going to get hot water to heat your house at night, and you're going to get more electricity off your solar panels during the day.
You know something that you could add to that is that if you actually put your container that you was going to be holding your warm water in. If you made it out of something like copper, which is good for conducting heat and actually electricity as well, but you could put Peltier elements on there, and as the wind is blowing underneath this thing, that's your temperature difference for your doggone Peltier element to actually produce even more electricity. So you're reusing that energy on multiple stages.
Right. In the wintertime, in the summertime when you don't need the heat, that's when you use the hot water.
Yep.
The material device.
Heck
yeah. We're not killing two birds with one stone. We're taking the same stone and killing birds and birds and birds and feeding our family with what
we're
doing.
We're knocking the whole flock down.
Yeah, I'm feeling. We've got our hunting rock.
Yeah. And we reuse the rock too.
Right. The TV show The Croods, they always had to have a special hunting rock.
Well, there you go, man.
Go with it. Take the solar panels and make them more efficient. Way more efficient.
You just heard multiple ideas, and we'll keep them coming. We'd like you to share your ideas with us as well. Jump over there to ShazizRadio.com and jump into the superchat.html and, just do what we're doing. We'll find solutions to your problems, and maybe you'll find solutions to ours, and together we can make the world a better place. Start
Dan Rohan did on YouTube exactly what I'm talking about. He took a big fish aquarium and a small solar cell, and it was already waterproof, but the backside of where the wires weren't, so he waterproofed those. He filled the tank up with water, put the solar panel in it, and it actually produced more electricity because it was kept cooler. But in the long run, the water in the fish aquarium heated up. Duh! So what I'm talking about is absolutely positively true.
Yep.
It will cause your solar panel to produce more electricity and heat water at the same time.
So, where can you buy black sand at?
Oh, that I don't know. I got a friend named Greg up in Washington State. He goes down to on the east west coast to the beach two or three times a year and collects black sand.
Because I was just thinking that you could actually add to that tire if you could get a hold of a couple bags of black sand, like when you put your hose or your pipe inside that tire, and then put some black sand down in the center of that tire. You see what I'm saying? Just fill it off, level it up.
Right.
And then let that thing sit out in the sun. You know that black sand's got to be attracting some heat.
You know, some black sand is magnetic, some is not. And I've heard that you can go out after a rain and with a magnet and just drag it across the ground and it'll pick up black magnetic sand.
Well, how long would it take me to use a magnet to pick up enough black sand to fill in a tire?
Probably a long time. I'll talk to Greg and see what to do about sending me some.
Well, there's other options out there, like maybe some rubber beads. I'm sure you could probably buy some of those online, you know, like material for making different types of plastics, some glass-filled nylon or something like
hey,
that.
I got an idea, Shaziz. Well, go to a place that recaps tires.
There you go.
When they recap a tire, what they do is they take the tire and put it in this machine that's got the metal grinding fingers on it, and they run the tire round, 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 and they grind all the excess tread off of it.
Yeah.
And use it really rough so that when they bond the new tread recap on it, it sticks better. And all that dust that comes off there is considered contaminant waste. They have to pay a lot of money to get rid of it. So if you haul it off for free, I think they'd let you.
Wow.
They'd probably kiss you.
See, there's a resource right there.
No joke.
Put some glass on or Lexan, because it's not UV resistant. Put some Lexan on the bottom and some Lexan on the top. Put your pipe inside the tire, then fill in that with that rubber, and then put some Lexan over the top so that none of it seeps out. You know, there you go, man.
Yeah.
Who knows? The heat of the sun probably bind it all back together again.
Right. You know, they make that half-inch styrofoam that's got the aluminum foil on one side.
Yeah.
Well, you can get it with aluminum foil on both sides, too, if you want. But get some with aluminum foil on one side. You glue that to your frame that I was talking about. They got stuff called CRC, which is cold roll channel.
Yeah.
Lather it, fuse it for framing, for stucco. And sheetrock, commercial sheetrock hangers, like my company, we put in metal stud walls. It's an inch and a half wide. It's got a 3/8 inch lip on the side. It's a piece of channel. That would make a beautiful frame for the thing. They're very inexpensive, less than 10 cents a linear foot. I mean, it's like a dollar a stick, but it sticks 10 foot long. And anyway, you make your frame out of that, then you glue the styrofoam to it, and then screw through your plywood, through the styrofoam, into that metal, so now you got a waterproof container.
Cool.
And it's exactly the perfect size, 1.5 inches thick, so it'll carry the heat off the backside of your deal. Huh.
Well,
I'm going to do that. I've got over 200 solar panels here, and I'm going to do a couple of them that way, just for a test.
Where there is a will, there is definitely a way.
You've got that right, Toby.
I'm gonna turn some of these old tires into a YouTube video, man. Because, you know, seeing is believing. When we talk about some of these things, I try to show what I can by doing experiments and filming them, and try to show the anomalies. It looks like Steven posted a doggone Lincoln or me or somebody already did it.
You know those the tubeless rods and tires? Think about this a minute. What that the hole that the stem comes out of? That's nothing more than a half inch hole. So you go to the automotive shop and you get another stem. You take your tire where the stem is, go straight across, drill a half inch hole through the metal, put another valve stem there. You take the valve out on the inside, hook your hose to it. Now you stand the tire up, you got a solar heater that will thermocycle.
There you go.
Yeah. Real simple. Super simple.
Well, heck yeah, and if the bead of the if you put the first off, Stephen posted a deal in there how to get a tire on a rim with starting fluid. My uncle used to do this with hairspray.
Yeah, I've seen it done.
He would fill the inside of the tire with hairspray and hit it with a lighter, and it would instantaneously, that pressure of that hairspray igniting would pop the bead and lock the tire in place. So what you was talking about just now, you may not even have to have any copper tubing in there, because if you had the tire and the tire was airtight, and you had an extra valve stem in there, one for circulation, you could actually pump water in one side of the tire and have it circulating through the valve stem back out the other side and have the sun heating that tire, which would transfer that heat inside there. And there you go. You just turn an old wheel and an old tire into a doggone heater. And if you spray paint the rim itself black, then that's also going to absorb heat.
Yep.
So now you're getting the metal the heat from the metal transfer, which you could heat the volume of the water inside that tire. You're not going to be drinking it, obviously, but
if you put your water reservoir a little hot, just a hair higher than the tire,
yeah,
it will thermal siphon. The hot water in the tire will go up and into your tank. Now you insulate the tank so it'll hold the heat. Any cold water in the tank is going to come down and replace the hot water that went up. And it's automatic. You don't even need to pump it. It'll pump itself.
And I know a way that I can test this theory, like without even having to modify the tire at all. I'll go out there, I will get a steel rim tire with, that I already know holds air. I'll take the valve stem out of it and then fill the entire tire with water. And hook a balloon to the valve stem, strap it down so you can actually see if the sun is putting heat off and actually turns into steam, that balloon will begin to expand.
Yep.
And so you can actually see if that finally starts to get to, boiling temperature or even hot, you know.
Put a plastic container over the balloon that you see the balloon.
Yeah.
But yet the wind can't cool it off.
Yeah.
And it'll do it faster. Yep, that would work.
Something where the balloon's still in the shade, but you'll know whether or not the doggone tire is actually putting heat. I'll tell you, that would be cool.
That would really be cool.
Because turning junk into something useful, I mean, if you can take an old car tire and cut your electric bill, tell me that ain't a doggone good YouTube video.
You know, here's the thing, though. You drill that rim out and put another valve stem in it directly across from the existing, you have not ruined the tire at all.
No.
It still works. You just got two valve stems, that's all.
Yeah.
You haven't hurt the tire or the rim one bit.
Put one on one side and one on the other side. That way you always got, a drain portion.
Right.
There you go, man.
Oh, here's the thing, though. You got to have check valves in the line, because if you don't, it'll work in reverse at night.
You mean for when it gets cold?
Check valves in it so the hot water can go up, but it can't come down.
Yeah, okay.
That way at night, the tire would cool off faster than your water reservoir, because your water reservoir is insulated. So your water would cool off, and it would work in reverse and cool all that water in that tank. So all you need is one check valve.
Well,
somewhere fine.
We can test this doggone deal. So simple, and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna get a tire, and I'm gonna fill it with water and leave it out in the sun, and then be able to maybe siphon some of the water out of it. Should all we have to step on the tire to push the water out, and then run a thermometer on the water to see what temperature it is.
Right.
By God, if that works, I know it will. I mean, the garden hose holds heat.
First off, I know you've got a drill. I know you've got a half-inch drill motor, and I know you've got a thermometer. And you just sat through saying you've got an old tire on the rim. So the only thing you're going to have to buy is another valve stem.
Yep.
And they're like 69 cents a piece. So what this whole experiment is going to cost you nothing more than your time and the $1.
Yep, and there are valve stem removers that you can get and recycle the valve stem. It's easy to do, man.
Yes, it is.
Make sure you pick up the valve stem when you have to go to the store anyway to get something. That way it's not even costing you gas.
Exactly.
Or the extra time to drive there, because you're driving there anyway. It's just the extra time to walk to the other side of the store to get it.
I'm telling you, it's so simple, it's brilliant. You know, if if you took and expanded on that idea, we just put some simple ideas on the table for you. If you expanded on that idea, you could turn something that was normally obnoxious in your yard into something that is now useful. You know, it's... What more can you ask?
Really?
Talking about repurposing, there's a repurpose right there. And, you know, normally you're not going to be drinking the hot water anyway. You could just use the hot water to circulate through your floor. You know...
Actually, if you run that hot water through some sort of piping system that has inside of another tank that has potable water in it, the water doesn't have to make contact with the water you're drinking. It can transfer the heat into it.
Yeah.
You like go. You were, like we were talking about with the evaporative cooling, you don't blow the mist or the evaporated water into the house. You use the cool chilled water that the evaporation creates to run through a radiator, and you blow a fan over the radiator, so that way there's no moisture coming into the house. You don't end up with excess moisture in your house.
And if you live in the desert, you want the moisture in the house, but if you
right.
then you don't want that moisture in the house. And what you just said works perfect.
Right.
In fact, a lot of your big commercial buildings still use that same system right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, because it's cheaper to operate.
The sun's doing most of the work during the day.
Cheaper to operate.
Yeah, the sun's doing most of the work during the day because it's basically heating up the water, the surface of it, to pull off the hottest atoms, leaving nothing but the coldest atoms behind, causing the temperature to drop.
The atoms that actually turn into steam actually steal heat from other atoms of water.
In the water, yep.
Yes.
Take it with them.
That's why the water gets
cold. If they can leave, they'll take that energy with them.
Yes, they will.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Steal it from others.
Stephen Gibbons did it again. He posted a link on Google search out there of uses for old car tires. Man, they're turning car tires into toys. They're turning them into hose racks. They got buried halfway in the ground for like an obstacle course. Somebody made a table out of one of them with a glass top. And, man, there's just tons. There's a little sandbox.
Using the flexibility to their advantage too. You can't throw used tires out in the dump. If they know what they're doing, they won't let you throw them out there, because with them being flexible, they'll keep working there. They'll keep flexing around every time the ground vibrates a little bit and work their way up to the surface and come out in somebody's yard later whenever you build a house on that landfill after it's full.
You are 117.5% correct, because every landfill I've ever been, the first thing they ask you, do you have any old tires in there?
Right. Now if you know that property exists in the tire, what can you use that property for to your benefit?
Yeah.
There you go, man. They're making planters out of these things, bird baths.
I'm surprised nobody has taken a bunch of those to put underneath the house. That's out in a earthquake zone, so the house can basically rock back and forth and vibrate back and forth to its own beat. In other words, it'll basically act like a shock absorber to keep the house from collapsing.
That's a cool idea, Paul.
Yeah.
They
made a dog bed out of a tire. Shelving out of a tire. Looks like somebody made some body armor out of some tires.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This one here is really cool. There's a picture. It looks like either a dragon or a snake where the tires all lined up and they're cut, they're painted, and it's got little googly eyes on the front of it. But it looks really cool, man. Yeah, somebody made a park bench out of a tire. Man, so many things. Thanks, Stephen. That's a brilliant link. See, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about, folks. You'd be surprised out there. People were doing. Somebody made a couch out of tires. Man, that's pretty neat.
Well, it's right. If it's wrapped up in something and ground up to a fine enough material, you could make the base of some sort of cushion or something like that, and then you've got something to sink into once you push past the foam rubber that's on top or something.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are talking about all this tire stuff, because now all of a sudden I'm starting to think about different things I've seen that were really useful. Like, for example, there's a couple of marinas around here in different lakes that we have in Texas where the people that own the marina have actually taken tires, drilled holes in them, and bolted them together, make like a reef. And they put it on the outside around the, marina. Therefore, boats out in the lake, running that up and down the lake, the waves don't come in and cause the boats in the marina to rock back and forth so violently and tear themselves up. Mm-hmm. It actually breaks down. It absorbs a lot of the energy from the waves in the water.
Do you think it would be possible to take an inner tube, fill it halfway with air, put some sort of pressure release valve on it, and set it out in the sun and have that thing expand and contract itself?
Oh, yeah.
Like when it gets to a certain pressure, a pop-off valve will let some of the air out and then go back halfway full again?
Yes, absolutely. Holy cow, you're right. And don't fill it with air, fill it with helium. It has a much higher expansion and contraction ratio.
Hmm.
Huh. Okay. And then you could fasten piezo crystals all around it, and the expansion and contraction would operate the piezo and cause it to produce electricity.
If you don't have piezo crystals, you could wrap coils and mount them to it and put magnets out around it that are on a fixed base, so that way when it expands and contracts, it immerses those coils into the field and then pulls them back out of it.
Oh my God, think about this. What if you submerge the tire in water and had the sunlight going through? The sunlight would heat the water and the air in the tire would expand, causing pressure to build up and pump the water up a hill, because now you have two check valves, one with the water coming in, one with the water going up, and the tire expanding would build a pressure because it couldn't go out the bottom, so it would build a pressure and cause it to go up. Well, now when it contracts, this check valve in the upper pipe shuts, and the water can't come back.
Right.
The water in the bottom can come in.
Rush in to fill it.
Yeah, so you can actually make a water pump out of this thing.
I would say if you've got enough water flow that it's pushing like that, the cold water coming in would cause it to contract.
Cool. Hey, Stephen put another brilliant comment in the chat room. He said, roofing shingles seem like a great idea for a shed or a house. And you could use the sidewall and the tread portion of the tire. You could use the entire tire as far as that goes. But the sidewall, if you've ever seen Spanish tile, are like half-looped tiles. So one would go upside down, and then the next one would come over the top of that. And there's your water seal right there. And then all you got to do is stack them alternate like that on the way up for the next row.
Exactly.
It's brilliant.
I can see several ways you could use a single tire to basically get the stuff you want out of it, and the process that you use for breaking down the tire leaves you with parts to make the other stuff out of too.
Right.
I knew somebody that used to find old tires, like he'd find places where they had them sitting out on the side, he'd see that the tread was worn down, but there was still plenty of rubber on the tire underneath the tread, and he took this tool that he could literally, it heated up, and it was a little blade, and it would reach down in there and cut a groove, and it was just basically like a U-shaped blade, and he'd push that through and regroove those tires. Well, if you line a bunch of those up across in a row and spin that tire around, you could literally turn the surface of that tire into real thin shavings that are, you know, if you've ever had a big bag full of rubber bands, that's what you'd end up with, is something like that for cushioning. cut grommets out of it and use it so that whenever you got the groove, where the tire in the tire, you put a hole down at the bottom of the groove, so that way a screw will sink way down in there and hold that thing down, and maybe a washer. But the rubber tire is sticking out, so that way if you've got something that's constantly sliding back and forth and banging into something else, it's just hitting that rubber now instead of hitting like metal on metal or something like that. Kill the sound, extend the life of the thing.
You guys just reminded me of something that my uncle did years ago. He didn't have any door hinges, gate hinges around, and so he just cut a couple slabs off of the side of a tire and used those for hinges.
And they don't need oiling?
Nope.
They don't squeak? And it lasts forever.
There you go, man. See? It just
they're not going to last forever, but the sunlight will break them down and turn them back into biodegradable material, and by then you can make another one.
Yeah.
You're talking about 10, 15, 20 years you'll get out of that one hinge. You don't have to do any oiling or anything.
That little hinge, it could rust up, squeak, and
apart. Yep. And when it does finally break down, it's just going right back to the environment. Instead of, you know, being something that's going to end up damaging things in the environment, you trap it from the environment so it doesn't damage anything until it's broken down and useful for the environment.
Right.
Let the sunlight do its job, man.
I'm so inspired by this conversation. I wanna seriously contemplate on turning my property into a free thinkers type of resort, to where people can come here and we can together repurpose things, build alternative energy stuff. And
hey, you were talking about the dome.
Yeah,
you got shingles now to cover it.
There you go.
And if you do it right, that thing will look spacey as all get out.
It'll look cool.
It'll look like dragon scales running across the outside of it.
So, you think people would come to old Shazuz's house to learn alternative energy and help design stuff?
I would.
Yeah, I can see it.
Cool. Because we could turn this place into a really neat research facility where we can test ideas and find out what works, make models of earth homes, and just really cool stuff, man. All kinds of alternative energy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully other people in other communities would see that, and, you know, we could swap ideas, things, you know. When I got into studying water and how it flows the waters and how different methods of pumping water, there's so many different, the ram pump, you can pump water with air, you can pump water with heat, there's so many different methods, and using everything that nature has to offer, you're talking about doing it off the grid. No electricity necessary. Just let nature do what nature does and get some work done in the process.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think that's cool, man.
It is.
So, folks, we put a lot of ideas on the table. You got any ideas, come share them with us. I'm going to turn some old tires into a YouTube video. I'm going to call it Redneck Water Heater.
There you go. I like that. Anything redneck, I'd go with.
Yep.
Hey, you got a new way to heat your hot tub now.
There you go.
Redneck. See, hot tub number two.
That I like the way you think, man, because, you know, during the summertime, it'll heat up, and even during the wintertime, it'll still heat up, as long as the sun's out. And
you get some glass and throw over it so the sun can still shine on it, and during the winter, that thing will still get hotter than the, you know.
I used to love when I had my hot tub here. shoes, man. I enjoyed it more in the winter than I did in the summer.
Yep.
Getting out there at night in the wintertime, getting that hot tub, it's like 5-10 degrees above zero. I'm tapping in on this 120 degree water. Ooh, I love it. Let's heat that water with sunlight. All right.
Well, with my redneck hot tub, I was out there and there was snow on the ground. I was out there. It wasn't the, it was getting
wow, in the you, you were using it in the global warming, huh?
Yeah. That's exactly what I was doing. And getting into the pool was cool, but getting out of the pool was even cooler.
Feel cooler.
And you just got to crank the heat up so that when you get out, you're glad to be out. It yeah. feels good to get cool.
And you could see steam rising off you as you was racing towards the house trying to get inside before you froze. Amazing what you can do with an old bathtub and a coffee pot, man. I tell you what, folks, necessity, like Raymond said, necessity is the mother of invention. Thomas said we need to network, and I'm saying let's get it together. Let's get our act together, and let's have some fun doing it. And that's what it's all about.
As one of my mentors once said, get her done.
Yeah. So, I guess we're getting down to the wire again, man. We do that a lot. Time flies when you're having fun.
It does.
But, you know, there's so many different possibilities. If we took everything that we have out here, there's things out there that we haven't even scratched the surface on that you could take these anomalies and simple
run
basic science and run with them.
Run with them. Don't walk. Run.
Then come back and teach us something that you learn. You know?
Yep. Do it on YouTube if you got to have something out of it, man. Make Google pay for it.
I still want to build a full-size version of the pop-pop boat. Now, every place, every method that I've tried so far, it all requires an expensive, like tubing bending and stuff. If somebody out there can bend some doggone tubing into a coil that I can build a pop-pop boat motor for like a 10-foot flat-bottom boat, I want to see that happen. I want to see that toy could be scaled up, you know. I believe yep. it can.
Absolutely, I do too.
And even better yet, if we take that pop-pop boat and we are able to run it with those coils using the sunlight, so you're out there, the only time people go out in the lake anyway for, real fun and entertainment is when it's hot outside anyway. And so if it's going to be hot enough to give you a sunburn, it's going to be hot enough to put that water pressure inside there, the temperature difference, to get that boat to move. And then you could have the outputs of the boat jetted like on a jet ski, where you can nozzle them up out of the water so that you can stop when you want. What do you think?
I love it.
Or turn.
Yeah. Use them to turn with. Use them to stop with. You know. And if it's done right, you could use them to back up. Put reverse on it.
Man, you're using that more than they use the floor in kindergarten.
Yep.
Eat on the floor, sleep on the floor, go home on the floor.
What you do, you're using a pulse jet engine, what it basically amounts to, and how do they slow airplanes down when they get on the deal?
Yep.
The jet goes the same direction, but they just block it, and it's quick. You could do the same thing with a putt-putt boat.
I want a full-size version, so I can say it can be done.
That's the thing run backwards.
And we know that we can build up pressure with heat. And so there ain't nothing stopping you from actually pressurizing some tanks and using air pressure to run that boat.
Right.
You know what I mean? Boil the water into steam. Use steam pressure to turn turbines to then in turn turn electric motors like a trolling motor or something. You're only limited by your imagination, folks. It's as simple as that. So, You guys got anything last to add in there?
No.
All right, well, that's I think that's about it, man. And so you're listening to Shazia's Radio Mad Science. Stay tuned for tomorrow, the Knights of the Round Table, and we'll see what we can get accomplished. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.